Up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I could drag it into the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you? Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now. Yeah.
And welcome, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, lovers of freedom, fairness, and democracy, truth, justice, the American way. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big program. Our good friend Erwin Aronson is going to be coming to talk about Scott Perry's House Bill 916 and the destruction of unemployment compensation here in the state of Pennsylvania. I got to tell you, these wacko lulus on the right, boy. They sure know how to kick a man when he's down. They sure know how to kick somebody when they're down and struggling. And this, another example of instead of reaching out, reaching a hand out to help, this is them basically smacking it away and telling you, tough luck, buddy, you're on your own. Now, there are some worse bills around the state. I don't want to give these crazies in this state any fodder, any more information. But, you know, at the end of all of this, it's about everybody sticking together, fighting back and pushing back against these kind of just egregious, outrageous attacks. But, you know, what did you expect? This is what we were talking about up until the November elections, that if what has happened were to come true, if we were sitting here with the Republicans with this kind of majority, we would be seeing these attacks on every front that they have begun. You know, today on the street, I ran into Mike Terzai, who was joking with a friend that I was with that, well, you know, we're just undoing all of the things that Rendell did for the last 8 years. And, you know, my question back is, who's going to undo all the damage that they've done in the first couple of months in this state already? Who's going to undo that? How long is it going to take to undo all of the damage that they're doing? If you're talking about damage that Rendell did, and now, look, I'm not a huge fan, but increasing the test scores, getting education funding where it belongs, if that's a bad thing, then you better look at your definition of what a bad thing is, because I think investing in the future of this state and in the future of this country, I think that's a good thing. But, you know, I got to be honest, you know, I ran into a bunch of very unsavory characters today on the radical right, and we are in for a very long summer, I think. Also on the program tonight, Jim Byrne, Pennsylvania Democratic Party. He's going to be here talking about Corbett's speech on Monday, about the vouchers, this insane budget, all of the stuff that's going on around that. Also, Greg Basta. Tomorrow, evidently, there's going to be a big rally on Wall Street where Greg and his group are going to be protesting the austerity measures proposed by Mayor Bloomberg. And the really, again, you know, you can't say deep, drastic, draconian cuts enough. I mean, it's slash and burn. It's scorched earth. But that is their M.O. The website on May12th.org, some information about that. And in the third hour, Daniel Newman from MapLight, he's the co-founder and executive director, are going to be talking about corporate money and politics and the president's proposed idea that, you know, anyone who's doing work with the federal government, you've got to disclose where you're spending money at on campaigns to influence elections. I think it's a good thing. I think it's a step in the right direction. We need to know where money is coming from. If you remember the last election, just inundated with attack ads from just wonderfully sounding named organizations, Americans for Prosperity. Who could be against that? Freedom Works. Who could be against that? Americans for Puppies and Children and Mom and Apple Pie. Who could be against that? The Citizens Alliance. But where'd the money come from? Handful of billionaires. Much like this voucher thing. This whole voucher thing is being pushed by a handful of very wealthy people who see there's a way for them to profit. And to boot, destroy public education, destroy opportunity, destroy the ability of working class folks to get ahead. That's what it's about. Anyway, today the big news, the Republican-led State House Appropriations Committee, they rammed through their budget plan. And again, no real surprise. The votes lined up along party lines. The vote was 20-13. Took almost 3 hours. Almost 3 hours of discussion. Almost a whole 3 hours. What due diligence? You got to give them credit. But the Republicans, they are going to be sticking to Corbett's $27.3 billion bottom line budget. And how are they going to do that? Well, they're going to steal from Granny to give a little bit back to the children. They're gutting $470 million from the public welfare department. And again, you look at this, the Department of Welfare, you think of, well, that's all that money going to those welfare people. No, the Department of Public Welfare is more than just TANF. It's more than just helping poor people. It's helping the elderly. It's helping the disabled. It's the public welfare. It's the public good. It's helping the public, not just that small percentage that collect welfare checks or food stamps. It's not that at all. But they love throwing that out there. We're going to take from those welfare people. And look, I've said this before. I'm not a big welfare fan. But I think you should start with the biggest welfare. Go after the biggest welfare cheats, the welfare cheats who rub it in your face, like ExxonMobil. I mean, every quarter when they put out their profits, and I think this time around it was almost $11 billion in the first 3 months of this year in profit, and then we find out we're giving them billions more in handouts. I got to be honest, not thrilled with that. Those are the welfare queens we've got to go after. Those are the people we've got to go after and stop. But why isn't there a big movement towards that? Why don't I hear at the coffee shop, well, those corporate welfare queens, they're stealing from us. You ever hear that? It's always looking behind you going, there's that poor person that I just passed on the street. They're getting something I didn't get. It's always looking behind. And I go back to this Stockholm syndrome thing. I think I'm going to be stuck on that for a while because most of the people, the working people that I've met recently, they seem to really be identifying with their captors. Anyway, the House Appropriations Committee Chairman, Bill Adolph, he claims that the drastically deep and draconian cuts are unavoidable. And he blames the Republicans in Washington for cutting off the stimulus funding. And again, I kind of get a kick out of that. It's pretty funny. And again, what it is it's robbing Peter, Paul, and Mary to give to corporations. You look at all of the money that they've given away in tax breaks and tax incentives and failure to close loopholes and failure to tax the drillers. And you go, at some point, don't we have to raise revenue? I mean, you're not going to be able to do this through spending cuts alone. And I look at this Reuters poll that says, look, more than half of the country is saying the fix here, folks, is in the middle. The fix here is some spending cuts and some revenue enhancements. Yeah, there's some areas we're going to need to cut. We're going to tighten the belt a little bit. But the other part is the folks who are doing quite well, we're going to need them to kick a penny or two in. The folks who've been doing well the last 30 years since this whole tax cut craze has been going on, this blind faith theology that if we cut taxes down to the bone, that somehow some benevolent corporation, thank you for the tax cuts, they will say, and then create jobs with it. Hasn't happened. In fact, I've yet to have anybody show me an example of where a tax cut created jobs. You know, as the one business owner told me, you give me a tax cut, I'm going to go on vacation. You give me customers, I'm going to provide a service. You give me customers, I'm going to expand my business. You give me demand, I'm going to expand my business. But Rick, tax cuts, if we put money in the hands of people who spend it, there will be economic activity. Yes. Targeting tax cuts to people who work for a living, I'm in favor of. But handing more money to the Koch brothers, handing more money to the Richard Mellon Scaifes and the Coors and the Davoses and all of these billionaires who they think spending their money on forming public policy is the best way to go about things. So I look at this Reuters poll, and I think you know, again, more than half the folks think we need to do a little bit of each. But what you've got a Republican Party who is dug in. Because they're emboldened, because they've got deep pockets behind them. They've got the Koch brothers. They've got all of this cash behind them. So they know they're going to be okay. And they've taken this position where there is going to be no tax increases, basically over their dead body. And again, you know, I question the strategy in that. I question the ability to have any constructive discussion. But I think their plan is that the Democrats will cave. And I'm hoping this time around they don't. I'm really hoping they don't. You know, we keep hearing, and I thought of this afternoon as I was walking over to the studio. We keep hearing this frame that, and it's one of these things that just grabs me, that, you know, there's all this walking around money and politicians are buying things, and that, you know, good fiscal conservatives are going to clean this stuff up. And Corbett ran on the position that he was going to get rid of whams and all of this. And I haven't heard much until recently about his budget day speech on these Liberty loan funds that he wants to set up. He wants to set up a $2 billion Liberty loan fund, basically where he has a big pile of cash that he can dole out to his people. Yet we're still talking about cutting $1 billion from education. Still talking about 56% cuts from higher education. The Republicans want to take $470 million from public welfare, and they want to put it all, it seems, into a big pot. For Corbett to hand out. Seems kind of dumb to me. We're going to be talking about that stuff today. Your call is 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. When we come back, we're going to talk with our good friend Irwin Aronson. This unemployment bill has just got me riled up. This House Bill 916, this Scott Perry bill is just an absolute abomination, and it's another slap in the face to workers. We're back after this.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. American Rights at Work Director Kimberly Freeman Brown says attacks on the National Labor Relations Board by South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley, Republicans in Congress, and the U.S. Chamber of Commerce are more about politics than the economy. The NLRB drew the attacks for its legal complaint against Boeing, alleging that Boeing illegally moved work to South Carolina to punish unions in Washington State for past strikes. American Rights at Work says the NLRB is just protecting workers' rights under federal law, ensuring that unions and businesses play by the rules. A bill banning collective bargaining for state employees may be dying on the vine in Colorado. State House Republicans there need all of their 33 members in the House to pass the bill, and they don't have the votes. The session ends today. The bill was approved by a Colorado House committee Friday, but has languished since. Two previous anti-union bills were killed in state Senate committees. Republican Colorado State Representative Keith Swerdfeger says he can't vote for this anti-collective bargaining bill, partly because he owns a contracting business that's been union for 40 years. The California Federation of Teachers is marching, protesting, staging grade-ins and other actions through Friday, protesting the defunding of public education in California. The CFT is calling for approval of California Governor Jerry Brown's tax extensions package, which includes a 1% surtax on the richest 1% of Californians. Diane Wilson has been fighting irresponsible corporations for more than 20 years, and this month she released the book Diary of an Eco-Outlaw, An Unreasonable Woman Breaks the Law for Mother Earth. Jesse Russell has more.
One of Wilson's most well-known battles has been with BP over the 2010 oil spill. Wilson comes from a family with a 100-year history of shrimping in the Gulf Coast, so the spill impacted her personally. During the BP hearings, she brought attention to the plight of fishermen in the Gulf when she covered her body in syrup and tended to look like oil. Wilson said such tactics are necessary because the fight between everyday people and corporations isn't equal. She started down her path after feeling powerless, so now she brings her issues straight to the top whenever possible.
If they were made accountable, then we would not see a lot of the things that we do, because right now they're getting away with murder. They're literally getting away with murder.
Wilson said the fishermen in the Gulf still aren't being respected. Instead, they're being vilified. According to Wilson, BP representatives have been telling the EPA that the only reason fishermen haven't been going back to work is because they're lazy.
But he was saying that the problem with these shrimpers and why they were still complaining and why they were talking about health impacts and why they wouldn't go shrimping is just because these people are lazy people and they're just looking for a handout.
This newscast made possible in part by the American Federation of Teachers, a union of professionals. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Standing tall against the multinational corporate agenda, The Rick Smith Show.
All the things you want are real. You have you to complete, and there is no deal.
And welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at TheRickSmithShow.com. Also, you can email me, Rick, at TheRickSmithShow.com. I do answer all emails personally. News today out of the Pennsylvania State Senate. Vote 38 to 12 passed another one of these radical measures. And, you know, as we're seeing across the country, Republicans have usurped the contracts that have been signed, and they just seem to be making up their own rules as they're going along. Here in Pennsylvania, our right-wingers have decided that kicking teachers to the curb should be made easier. So instead of negotiating, they simply ram through another one of their dictates. I guess more business-friendly education. We should dump teachers, I guess, you know, as this goes, when the pennies get tight. And, oh, by the way, we're gutting state funding so that we will ensure that there's no money there and we can do with teachers what we want. Man, I got to tell you, these people, Stockholm Syndrome, again, I go back to that. That's all I can think of. And that's the only reason I can come up with, the only thing I can think of, why we're not seeing people rushing to the Capitol and overthrowing the State House right now. Amazing stuff. I've got our good friend, Attorney Irwin Aronson, on the line, talk about some of this ridiculous stuff that's going on. Irwin, thanks for taking time for me.
Well, happy to be here, and before we do anything else, happy belated birthday to my good friend Rick Smith.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Old guys like you need to be, you know, recognized and reminded.
Yeah, I got my happy birthday cupcake.
Good for you.
What do you think of this? I mean, you know, Fulmer has pushed through this bill through the Senate there to try and make it easier for school districts to furlough teachers because of economic reasons. And you know, again, instead of going through the contract and having negotiations, it just seems like they want to rewrite the rules and dictate from the top.
Well, you got it. It seems to me that if that's the case, we citizens of Pennsylvania ought to be able to unilaterally adopt a policy that ends the term in the Senate of somebody like Fulmer for economic reasons. And we know that the state is bankrupt. We got a $4+ billion deficit, so maybe we just eliminate Fulmer's position.
There you go. We already know which way he's going to go. I mean, just concede the vote.
Yeah. I mean, no, give it a break. Give us a break. There's an interesting interplay. School teachers, you remember those people into whose hands we entrust our society's most precious resource, our children, our future, get paid really lousy salaries.
Yep.
okay? Somebody spends 40 years in the public school system in Pennsylvania, and they end up with their highest salary. It's maybe $60,000, $65,000 a year. Not that that's anything to sneeze at, but after a 40-year career of dealing with irate parents, difficult principals, outrageous legislators, governors who announce budget messages that say we're going to eliminate the funding for what you do and still demand that you do this, kids who act up in school, behavior problems, guns in the classroom, knives, etc. You know the drill. Work all day at the school and work all night grading papers, preparing lesson plans, doing all that kind of stuff. To end up with a $60,000 paycheck isn't much. But what we did was we created a framework in which they had access to employee benefit plans like pensions, that would give them the opportunity after the completion of a career and a very demanding education that they could retire in some dignity. That during the time that they would work, while they give up access to the pay that, say, we give a professional basketball player or a baseball player who uses steroids and contributes virtually nothing to society, or the CEO of a major corporation who gets what a teacher's career earnings are in 1 year's worth of bonus, we gave a trade-off, and part of the trade-off was that they were entitled to tenure, and part of the trade-off was that public school districts, the 500 public school districts in Pennsylvania, could not terminate teachers from their positions for mere economic reasons, that there had to be a program change, that there had to be the total modification of our approach to education, where we eliminate or modify an entire department, and not merely because somebody didn't want to have the community pay its fair share into the cost of education. So now that literally decades of relationships and compensation plans and integrations of the various aspects of the workplace and the educational system, more importantly, have been built on these multiple legs of a three-legged stool. Fulmer comes around and says, we're going to saw off one of the legs, and don't you dare tell me that you have a complaint about it. That's what this is about. And I will tell you that as a parent of four children, the last thing in the world I want my children to face in a classroom is a teacher who has to be so worried about whether his or her job is going to be around tomorrow that he or she can't focus on teaching my children how to add and subtract, multiply and divide, read a sentence, comprehend a word.
I agree. But you look at this whole attack on public education, Irwin, and what frustrates me is they're winning the messaging war. They've got these very simplistic slogans, and they've got, you know, Democrats who have signed on this whole move towards privatization. And, you know, on Monday, our governor was in Washington, D.C. with Scott Walker from Wisconsin, in front of a billionaire crowd of people who are funding this attack from outside of Pennsylvania. And to me, at some point, there's got to be some pushback.
Oh, I think that you're absolutely right, and I think that it's interesting to note that it was Tom Corbett who attacked teacher unions for all of the ills in an educational system that he advocates not merely dismantling, but saddling with $1 billion worth of unfunded mandates to finance the private schools that the rich people send their kids to.
Yeah, well, this is what he said on Monday. Here's the full clip. It's a little bit long, but this is the full clip so you get the context. No, evidently not. But he said basically, you know, it's what's happened is we've gotten into a situation where that no longer is it about the students, he claims. It's become about labor management. And again, you know, whose fault is that? It's the school districts partially.
I am not blaming teachers for wanting a living salary. I am not faulting them for wanting protection against capricious dismissal. My first job out of college was that of teaching in high school. I taught history and civics to the entire ninth grade. I know that the job is not an easy one. What I do protest is the fact that in the years since teachers unionized, school districts began to focus too much on contracts and too little on curriculum. The educational model degenerated. It has shifted to a labor management model that focuses, has become teacher, parent, child. That's entirely backward, and I hope you agree with me on that.
Well, of course, he's standing in front of a billionaire crowd. Of course, they're going to agree with him. But again, you know, it's pushing this whole thing onto the teachers' unions, which, you know, he never bothers to say that the teachers are their union, but that's a whole other argument.
Well, that's the old right-wing lunatic fringe approach. They forget that in the word union, the first three letters are you and I. I'm a member of a union. I've been a member of a union for 39 years, okay? I go to membership meetings in my union. I hear and participate in approving not merely every dollar that the union spends, but on the contracts that are negotiated. They're not negotiated by some outsiders. They're negotiated by us. This is the workplace. This is our workplace. But what's really nasty, what's really cynical about this approach is the implication that somehow or another it's illegitimate for teachers to be represented at the workplace as a group, as a unit, even though the law of this state, the law of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, is that collective bargaining is what is permitted and preferred. So when I hear a governor say the words that I just heard you replay, I hear a governor who is saying that he, in his capacity as someone who raised his right hand and put his other hand on a Bible and swore to uphold, protect, and defend the laws of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, decided that he doesn't like this law, so he's going to go on the attack. I think he's breaching his constitutional duty. I think he's violating his oath of office.
Can we recall him?
I think that we should talk about a recall. We don't have that recall right here in Pennsylvania, but it may be that when somebody commits a high crime or a misdemeanor, that they ought to be the subject of an impeachment. I think it's a high crime or a misdemeanor for somebody who is the chief law enforcement officer to stand outside of my state on a trip where I had to pay far more to the state troopers and the state automobiles that protected to get him down to Washington for his security detail than the teachers that were teaching children how to read and write yesterday in the Harrisburg School District, for example, were getting paid, so that he can go and basically have a fundraising tour with a group of people who are advocating the decimation of the system of education that allowed people like me who grew up in poverty to get to a point where I had the same education as the rich kids in a good public school.
And that's what they want to take away. You listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with our good friend, Attorney Erwin Aronson. You know, Erwin, one of the other things that I wanted to get to, it's this unemployment compensation bill. And I know that it's got you riled up, but Scott Perry is the representative from the Dillsburg area, has come out with House Bill 916, which basically, well, I shouldn't say basically, completely destroys our unemployment compensation system, the way benefits are calculated, the amount that benefits that are paid out to people, and a whole bunch of other really drastic moves.
Well, they're not drastic, Rick. They're draconian. And please, don't you make the mistake that Representative Scott Perry, that's who you're talking about. I know sometimes we get him confused with Scott Walker. Scott Perry from down in Dillsburg, and he's a real dilly. They call it unemployment compensation. It's unemployment insurance. Okay, it's insurance on which we workers pay a premium out of every paycheck. It's in the nature of an unemployment insurance deduction. Looks like a tax, but it's insurance. And we pay that premium, and what Scott Perry is announcing he thinks ought to happen is that this insurance program that as a matter of law going all the way back to 1935, adopted as part of the broader-based Social Security framework throughout the United States, that this program that says that we start out with a presumption that people who lose their jobs are eligible for benefits for the insurance program that they have financed, somehow needs to be perverted and have that assumption taken away. You have to understand, and our listeners need to hear, I believe, that the unemployment compensation law, the unemployment insurance statute, is a remedial statute that has repeatedly been interpreted by the courts in this state, all the way to the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, all the way through a case that I was involved with called Penn Hill School District. Stands for the proposition that this remedial statute requires the granting of unemployment insurance benefits to claimants unless there's a specific statutory provision that prohibits benefit eligibility. And there are only three provisions in that law that restrict or limit benefit eligibility. One is for people participating in a strike where they have a direct economic benefit in the strike. They would be prohibited from eligibility.
Right.
Two is if one leaves his or her job voluntarily and without a necessitous and compelling reason. So a voluntary quit situation. Not a quit where somebody has been exposed to a hostile work environment and needs to quit to save their sanity, but somebody who quits because they want to go off and do something else.
Right.
That's a disqualifier. And the third and only other disqualifier is someone who is terminated for willful misconduct, stealing, lying, cheating, not showing up for work, fraudulently turning in time records, those kinds of things that are willful misconduct. Any loss of a job under Pennsylvania law that is not involved in one of those three reasons is presumed eligible for unemployment compensation benefits, and that presumption exists as a matter of law. It is non-rebuttable. And the burden is always on the employer to demonstrate that somebody engaged in one of those three kinds of conduct. And if it can't be demonstrated by the employer, then in that event, people are eligible for benefits.
Right.
So now Representative Perry wants to change that. He wants to say that it's a my-fault statute instead of a no-fault statute. And despite the fact that you paid the insurance premium, he wants to have the opportunity to say, as a matter of law, you're still not eligible for benefits. That's like you paying on a life insurance policy for 40 years, and when you die, they go to your heirs and say, oh, Smith died of a heart attack. Heart attacks aren't covered, so we're not going to pay you.
Sorry, you're cut off.
You're cut off.
Let me ask you this. You know,
and we decided, by the way, the heart attacks weren't covered 39 years into his 40 years of paying premiums.
Well, that is what it's like. But here's the thing. Here's what gets me. In his press release, in Scott Perry's press release on this House Bill 916, he says, quote, the legislation was written with direct input from the Pennsylvania Chamber of Business and Industry and the National Federation of Independent Businesses. No mention of workers, no mention of labor, no mention of anything other than that this bill was written with direct input from these business special interests. So in looking at this, you've got to come to the conclusion, as I did, that this is a big, wet, sloppy kiss to corporate special interests.
Of course it is. But what's really offensive is that this is not the compensation to employers law. This is the unemployment insurance law. The one entity, the one group, the one affected player that he specifically and proudly announced was not involved were the victims of the workplace, the victims of unemployment, and their families. Everybody needs to continuously remember that the reason we created unemployment insurance in 1935 in this country is because we were in the throes of a depression, and there were a whole lot of landlords that weren't collecting rent, and there were a whole lot of drug stores that weren't getting paid, and there were a whole lot of shoe stores that weren't selling any shoes. This is subsistence income. This is not money that's going to people that are using it to take a trip to Aruba. This is money that goes to pay for the choices that people, when they're unemployed, have to make between medicine and milk and sugar and shoes.
Right. So what do we do? I mean, you know, the last question I've got, you know, where do we take this? What do we do? How do we stop it? What's the answer?
Well, how we stop it is the way we always stop bad things in the legislative process. We roll up our sleeves and pull out our telephones and crank up our computers, and we start to communicate with rank and file members of the House of Representatives, but we don't do it with a bunch of fat old white guys like me wandering around in Harrisburg. We do it in Dillsburg with people who are affected by this, that live in Dillsburg, in Representative Perry's district, calling his office, writing emails to his office, physically visiting his office. And every other one of the Scott Perrys in every one of the other 202 legislative districts in Pennsylvania and 50 Senate districts in Pennsylvania. And we do it at home in the legislative offices. And we make it clear that those of us who are affected by this are the voters. I have many times said something, and I haven't ever said it in the context of a conversation with you before, but it's a good time for me to say it. People need to remember that hands that write on blackboards and hands that guide school buses, hands that change poopy diapers and hands that care for the sick, hands that pull wire and hands that sweat pipes, hands that guide tractor trailers down the turnpike, your hands, my hands, all of our listeners' hands are hands that pick governors, senators, congressmen, state house members, state senators, mayors, school board members, county commissioners next week. And those hands need to go to work, not merely trying to support their families, but trying also to protect their families from the avarice of a legislature out of control, supported and financed by big business, big money, and anti-worker advocates. And we do that not in Harrisburg, but at home, in our own districts.
And there is our call to action. Contact your representatives. I can contact early, often, and as many times as you can, because that's what's important. They do take that stuff seriously.
Then they need to know always that we're watching them, and that unlike those of us who have lost our jobs in this economy, those members of the General Assembly have jobs, and those jobs are being employed by us. They work for me. They work for you. They work for everybody listening to us tonight.
Yep, and that is an excellent place to end this. Erwin, I appreciate the time. Thanks so much. Always great insight.
Thank you. Be well, be safe, and again, happy, healthy birthday.
Thanks so much. Our good friend, Attorney Erwin Aronson. We're going to take a quick break. Right back after this, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Thought back to America. Rick Smith.
If your job paid $50,000 a year and you stayed at it for 47 years, your total tally for a lifetime of work would be $2.4 million. Not bad, but hedge fund hustler John Paulson pulled down that much last year. Most of us would consider an annual income of $2.4 million to be a windfall. But he didn't take Paulson a full 12 months of work to pocket his windfall, or 1 month, a week, or even a day. That's how much he made an hour. Yes, Paulson could have worked one single hour in 2010 and hauled off a paycheck equal to what a typical household gets for a lifetime of work. Now, guess who gets the lower tax rate? The $50,000 a year family, or the $2.4 million an hour Wall Street man? Right. Thanks to a loophole big enough to drive an armored truck through, billionaire hedge fund dealers like Paulson escape the usual 35% tax rate, instead paying, at most, 15%. That's more than wrong. It's immoral. In Washington, Wall Street-backed Congress critters are working fervently to kill Medicare and defund everything from education to environmental protection, all on the grounds that the only way to cope with a growing federal deficit is to bulldoze programs that Americans count on. But look behind that lush hedge over there, and what'll you find? The 25 biggest hedge fund dealers who took $22 billion in pay last year. If just these 25 guys were taxed at the 35% rate, Congress would have an additional $4 billion this year to use for filling the deficit hole, rather than gleefully throwing six seniors into it. This is Jim Hightower saying, since 1995, the total income of the 400 richest Americans has nearly quadrupled. Yet the real tax rate they pay has been cut almost in half. America isn't broke. It's being gamed by super-rich tax dodgers. To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Who sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters? Rick Smith.
The rich pay too much taxes. The poor get way too much. Instead of schools, build prisons and lock the children up. We won't believe those lies again, because God is a Republican.
Yep, God's a Republican, and he hates those lazy people. He hates those unemployed. Yeah, again, you know, you look at this, and all across the country, you're seeing the same attacks. I'm wondering when it's going to dawn on folks that their local Republican Party is not the party that their parents or grandparents grew up with. This is a national coordinated effort to steal back all of the gains workers made in the last 100 years. This is a well-coordinated plan. Come out of a central location, out of one of the think tanks, the Koch brother founded Cato Institute, or the American Enterprise Institute, or one of those heritage foundations, or all of them. They've all come to this grand scheme. Because right now they think they can get it all. They can push through all of their radical agenda, which is to take us back to the days of the feudal lords, where you have a few very, very wealthy and a large peasant class. And I look at this House Bill 916, Scott Perry's bill, and if you live in Dillsburg, I suggest you give that guy a call and say, this, my friends, is not the answer. Especially when you look at the reality that this, and he admits it, and that's what gets me. He's bold enough to come out and say, yep, corporate special interests, they wrote it. Sure, yep, oh yeah, we're right on board with their needs. Screw you, we care about them. If you knew anything about the workers, the unemployment comp system, though, what's happened is we've seen a massive shift in wealth to the corporations. It's the workers who have paid on every single penny of their income. As raises came in, they paid more. It's the employers who only pay on the first $8,000. Think about that. They haven't seen an increase in their unemployment comp rates in 25 years. And yet they say the comp rates are, the insurance rates are too high. You haven't had an increase in 25 years, which is why the fund is in trouble. You know, if the health insurance industry, if they weren't allowed to have any increases for 25 years, do you think they would be paying out any claims? No. And they wouldn't be paying out big bonuses to their CEOs either, because there'd be no money in it. And then we're surprised that it's $3 billion in the hole, because we're not asking those who are doing real well to contribute more. At some point, you got to look at this piece of legislation and say, this is a big sloppy wet kiss to the corporate form at your expense. You know, I remember being laid off, and I don't know about you, Jake, but I've been laid off a couple of times. I've had to go through the process. It's not a fun process. In fact, you know, it's a depressing process. But at the end of it, you have some security in knowing that, you know what, there's a little bit here. It's going to help me get through a rough patch. And now what we've got is we've got this guy who wants to take that away and make that unsecure.
I was laid off twice, and I remember the first time they made available and pushed you to take other jobs, which is fine. That's their right by law. So it's not, I think a lot of people on the right think that, you know, most people take that unemployment and don't look. That's not true. A lot of people take that unemployment, and first of all, for economic reasons, are looking for a job because unemployment only pays a certain percentage of your wages. It's not, and I think Irwin hit it on the head. This is supposed to be a system that people pay into, and when you need it, it's supposed to be there. And I think it's unconscionable for these people now to change the rules, which is exactly what they're doing, to your detriment.
Well, you know, here's the thing. If there are any unemployed in the Dillsburg area, I'd love it if you contacted me, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425, or email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. I would love to find somebody who's unemployed who voted for Scott Perry there and get their thoughts on this piece of legislation and what you think. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. We're right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Back after this.
This is why we fight, why we lie awake. This is why we fight.
Finally, radio for the rest of us. Rick Smith.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make history happen!
My name's Diane. I'm a single mom. I have twin boys who are 19, Alex and Tyler. We were a very close family, and I miss them a lot when they're away at school.
I definitely miss her. Yeah, I mean, she did our laundry back when we were home. Now we got to do it ourselves, so if nothing else, that's why we miss her.
Diane wanted individual health insurance for her sons, but she needed something affordable.
Health insurance is important because all it would take was one accident, and I could lose everything I worked for.
So she did her research and called Georgiana at Capital Blue Cross.
Georgiana was great right from the beginning. She stepped me through the entire process, and the coverage is wonderful. They have a great plan, and it's affordable. I feel like I can sleep at night knowing that my boys are covered.
My mom will always be the smartest one.
Text radio to 74574 for a sample quote. Message and data rates may apply. Your final quote may vary. Please don't text and drive. Capital Blue Cross is an independent licensee of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association.
The proud defender of the American dream, Rick Smith.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Yesterday, Bernie Sanders and Jim McDermott came out with their single-payer bills. Again, you know, this is a discussion I wish we were having at the beginning of 2009. I wish we were having this discussion 2 years ago, because I think that's the answer. The single-payer is the answer. Get the profiteers, the investor class out of healthcare. Get it out. But the Republicans, they have a completely different idea. And if you saw Rand Paul today, he's going, well, you know, have healthcare being a right. If you believe healthcare is a right, then you believe in slavery. And his premise was that, well, if you're going to make me treat those people as a doctor, and you're going to make me participate in that system, then I'm a slave somehow. And I'm going, I'm not quite getting that. But that's the frame that he wants to throw out, that somehow, by making sure that all of the citizens of the country are covered, thus, you know, honestly and truthfully, thus protecting me from someone who's uninsured, somehow if that's slavery, I think I have a problem with definition. And you look at what Reuters put out today. about the House Republican budget that would leave up to 44 million more low-income people uninsured over the next 10 years as they cut Medicaid funding by more than a third. We've already got 50-some million, and it's probably 55 million by now. In 10 years, there's a possibility that we could have a third of the country without health insurance. Is that the direction we want to go in? And, you know, the more that we go down that path, and I think this is the scorched earth plan. If we can take it away from people who are, you know, moderately low income and below, eventually they're going to be getting it away from the elderly. And if they can take that away, then they've got their perfect system, which is a perfect for-profit system, which means if you don't have the money, Jake, sorry, you know, you die. If you can't afford the insurance premiums, sorry, you're not going to get seen.
And then it'll tie right into their efforts to privatize Medicare, sadly.
And this whole, you know, again, you knew, they're very predictable. You got to give the Republicans credit. They're predictable, if nothing else. You knew when the whole Medicare thing came out, it was really about going after Medicaid. You knew that that would be the trade-off. We could pit granny against the poor people. And any time that fight happens, granny's going to win. Because people are more sympathetic to granny because she's older than they are to poor people. That's just basic human nature. And, you know, the more we let them divide us like this, just like here in the state with the state budget.
Yep.
They're pitting social programs against education. And you knew it was coming the day Corbett laid out his budget. You saw it coming. You knew it was coming. And then they did it, and you said, well, we knew it was coming. And what I love about the Republican budget, not to get too far off track the healthcare discussion, but the what I love about it is we've restored funding to education. No, you restored a bit, a tiny amount. You're still allowing $890 million to be cut from K-12 education. You're still allowing higher education to be cut by almost 40%. That, my friends, is not coming to the rescue of those programs. It's not. And again, we knew that was going to be what they would do, but they can do it with a straight face, as where I couldn't. I absolutely could not. And, you know, at the end of the day, they're hoping that you're not paying attention. And I'm telling you, man, now is the time to put the goggles on and start looking at what is going on around us. Because this budget is just horrible. But anyway, I mean, in 10 years, they're estimating a third of the people in this country will be uninsured. What is that going to mean for the people who have insurance? How high will the rates go? And will we see people lying on the street dying? Will we see what happened in California a couple of years ago where Kaiser Permanente was putting people in cabs and dropping them off at Skid Row? Will we see that kind of treatment of the destitute? Will we see that kind of treatment of the poor? And there's part of me that says, you know, the conservative ideology is let those people die because they're not willing to take care of themselves. Never mind whether they can or not. I mean, there's a homeless woman down the street from us who, you know, she's got mental health problems. And there is no help for her. You know, she's happy where she's at. She seems to be getting along just fine. But at the end of the day, she's still got some serious mental health problems. And she has the ability to take care of herself. She's got the finances. We just have no way of helping her. And that's a failure of our public health system.
You know, once again, Rick, when you talk about health care, we got into this discussion 2 years ago. As horrendous as that is and as inhumane as that is, when we allow health care costs to go up, we are losing a competitive edge. If all the Republicans care about is their money, their wealth, long term, that will affect our wealth because we are going to be losing a competitive edge with all these other nations that provide health care at a reasonable cost for their people and their employers, by the way. And that's another issue that we don't even talk about. I think that's an issue where we can smack the Republicans in the mouth with their own. They're always for business, for business, for business, keeping costs down. You want to keep costs down? How about keeping the cost of health care down? If you're not going to allow the single-payer system, we're going to keep the system we have. Then we have to control, and actually we have control costs whether we're talking about Medicare for all, a single-payer, or we're going to keep the for-profit system that we have. We have to keep the cost down.
You know, at the end of all of this, what I see coming is this growing crisis. And nothing ever seems to get done unless we have a massive crisis. So maybe it's going to take 100 million people uninsured. Maybe it's going to take people jamming the emergency rooms, people jamming the doctor's offices, jamming the capitals. Maybe it's going to take that before we then begin to look at a system that's going to work. And, man, think of this for a second. A third of the country will be uninsured. You know, they claim right now the average policyholder is paying over $1,000 per policy for people who are uninsured. And that's for just emergency care. That's for, you know, you fell off your bike and broke both your knees, and they're going to fix it. If you're uninsured, they're going to fix you. That's not taking care of long-term ailments. That's not treating diabetes long-term until you get to the stage where you can't work and then you go on the social programs. This, to me, and again, I think our Republican friends are allowing it to fester and fester until it becomes a crisis, and then they can claim, oh, well, you know, it doesn't work, and we need to cut it off and do these really draconian things.
I don't think even if the figures you're quoting, the Republicans are going to care, because right now our system's so bad, we have a third that are underinsured. A third. 100 million Americans that are underinsured and getting worse daily. That hasn't bothered them. They haven't changed one iota from their for-profit support of the for-profit system.
So I ask, you know, at what point do we then say we need to have an alternative? You know, I've yet to, and I'm open to a number of alternatives, but it's got to be a comprehensive plan. You know, I'm even open, and I've had these discussions with conservatives. I'm not against a private insurance industry who is well-regulated. Not against that. Other countries have it. The private system for them is in a well-regulated environment, works just well, as does a public pay system. I'm not against that. The end result for me is what's important. Making sure that from cradle to grave, I'm insured, my children are insured, my neighbors are insured, my coworkers are insured from cradle to grave, and that there's not this passing of the buck from private interest to public interest. I mean, the system we have is ripe with fraud and abuse, mostly abuse of pushing people's treatment off, holding them off, denying them care until they get bad enough where they can't work and they lose their policy. Or they're bad enough that they can't work and they end up on the back of the taxpayers through Medicaid or Medicare. Not what the Republicans want to do. They want to take away Medicaid. They want to block grant that, so it's capped. That's it. Once the money runs out, sorry, folks, all of you people who need help, tough. Wait till next year. That's what they want to do. They want to create that kind of a system. Which, again, you know, the single-payer system scares me when a conservative gets into power. Because then they say, well, we're going to block grant and health care. And when that money runs out, sorry, no more health care for anybody. That's what they're going to do. You know that down the line, so which is why it's amazing to me that any working person in this country would consider themselves a conservative.
But I think truly, Rick, in the long term, if we get a single payer and it works, and I do believe it can work, I think it will become exactly like Social Security over the decades, Rick. It'll be the third rail. And any conservative that touches it, that's their political career.
We'll see.
That's the death of their
political. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Jim Byrne, executive director of the Pennsylvania Democratic Party, back after this.
The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better. Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
American Rights at Work Director Kimberly Freeman Brown says attacks on the National Labor Relations Board by South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley, Republicans in Congress, and the U.S. Chamber of Commerce are more about politics than the economy. The NLRB drew the attacks for its legal complaint against Boeing, alleging that Boeing illegally moved work to South Carolina to punish unions in Washington State for past strikes. American Rights at Work says the NLRB is just protecting workers' rights under federal law, ensuring that unions and businesses play by the rules. A bill banning collective bargaining for state employees may be dying on the vine in Colorado. State House Republicans there need all of their 33 members in the House to pass the bill, and they don't have the votes. The session ends today. The bill was approved by a Colorado House committee Friday, but has languished since. Two previous anti-union bills were killed in state Senate committees. Republican Colorado State Representative Keith Swerdfeger says he can't vote for this anti-collective bargaining bill, partly because he owns a contracting business that's been union for 40 years. The California Federation of Teachers is marching, protesting, staging grade-ins and other actions through Friday, protesting the defunding of public education in California. The CFT is calling for approval of California Governor Jerry Brown's tax extensions package, which includes a 1% surtax on the richest 1% of Californians. Diane Wilson has been fighting irresponsible corporations for more than 20 years, and this month she released the book Diary of an Eco-Outlaw, An Unreasonable Woman Breaks the Law from Mother Earth. Jesse Russell has more.
One of Wilson's most well-known battles has been with BP over the 2010 oil spill. Wilson comes from a family with a 100-year history of shrimping in the Gulf Coast, so the spill impacted her personally. During the BP hearings, she brought attention to the plight of fishermen in the Gulf when she covered her body in syrup and tended to look like oil. Wilson said such tactics are necessary because the fight between everyday people and corporations isn't equal. She started down her path after feeling powerless, so now she brings her issues straight to the top whenever possible.
If they were made accountable, then we would not see a lot of the things that we do, because right now they're getting away with murder. They're literally getting away with murder.
Wilson said the fishermen in the Gulf still aren't being respected. Instead, they're being vilified. According to Wilson, BP representatives have been telling the EPA that the only reason fishermen haven't been going back to work is because they're lazy.
But he was saying that the problem with these shrimpers and why they were still complaining and why they were talking about health impacts and why they wouldn't go shrimping, it's just because these people are lazy people and they're just looking for a handout.
This newscast made possible in part by the American Federation of Teachers, a union of professionals.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit Labor Radio.
The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
You know, sold to the lowest bidder. I mean, that seems to be the game plan that our Republican friends have. The fire sale that will be known as the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Sell off the liquor store, sell off the turnpike, sell off whatever we can at fire sale prices. I sat this morning talking to a couple of people about the privatization scheme of our state stores, and it doesn't add up on any level, but yet ideologically, the Republicans are still pushing forward, even if it's going to cost you, I, the taxpayers, money in the long run, just because it's their blind faith ideology. Amazing stuff. Anyway, the Republicans came out today and they endorsed their version of the budget. And as I've been saying, you knew it was coming. They're going to take money from public welfare, move a little bit over to education to try and quell some of the anger that taxpayers have. I'm hoping it doesn't work. So I've asked Jim Byrne, Executive Director of the Pennsylvania Democratic Party, come talk to us a bit about this budget. Jim, thanks for taking time for me.
Good evening. Thanks for having me on the show.
I'm looking at this budget, and Corbett wanted to cut $1 billion from K-12 education. The Republicans' grand plan in the House is, only cut it by $890 million.
Okay, let's break 10 bones instead of 15 bones. It's a distinction without a difference. It's a vain attempt to try and fight good cop, bad cop. Look, Mr. Corbett, we're not going to be as tough on you as Mr. Corbett wanted to be. we're only going to beat you within a half of an inch of your life. Mr. Corbett wanted to beat you to death. That's how I see it.
Yeah, and you look at all of this, and you knew it was coming, but you got to give them credit. They, you know, they stood up there with a straight face, and they told the state of, they told the Commonwealth that, you know, we're going to do the right thing by you, but we still got to keep to that $27.3 billion. We can't raise any extra revenue.
Well, they have not. If they truly were trying to distance themselves from the governor, whose negatives tripled from 11% to 38% in a matter of 2 months, I don't think they succeeded. If they're going to run around the state and try to promote this when it makes the draconian education cuts, and they're going to try to mitigate it by taking money from the welfare programs, they're going to be disappointed when they get out there to the town hall meetings.
Yeah, and I'm hoping that happens, and I'm encouraging people to get out to those meetings, to call their representatives, to get in their face, and to have this discussion. Look, you know, don't steal our children's future, but also don't take it off the backsides of my grandmother and the disabled either. Evidently they found a surplus of money that's coming in, more revenue than they were expecting, right?
That is correct. And what do they want to do with it? Do they want to mitigate these education cuts? Do they want to do some proactive measures with our infrastructure, which is the worst in the United States? No, they want to sit on it. The Post-Gazette, which endorsed Tom Corbett, by the way, laid into the Harrisburg Republicans today in an editorial about the fact that they don't want to put this money to use.
And it makes almost no sense to me. A rainy day fund is supposed to be when it's raining. I got to tell you, I think it's pouring.
You beat me to the punchline. It is a rainy day fund. Well, we're in the middle of a downpour here, so let's use it when we need it, and we need it right now. Explain to the families that have to move out of this state for education. Explain it to the college students, our future leaders, who have to go somewhere else now, that it isn't raining in their lives. Explain it to the folks who Corbett cut their entitlement to health care and did nothing to resurrect it. Explain to those folks who now can't get it to see a doctor or to have an x-ray, or to have chemotherapy. Explain to them that it's not raining in their world. A total disconnect with the working families of Pennsylvania.
You know, Jim Byrne, I look at this, and I understand shared sacrifice. I do. When times are tough, I think Pennsylvanians, I think Americans in general, willing to roll up their sleeves, get their hands dirty, and solve a problem, and share in the sacrifice. But I'm sorry, I'm not seeing the sharing. I'm not seeing the sharing of this great sacrifice. We're cutting from education. We're cutting from public welfare. Yet we're handing out money to corporations. We're allowing the laundering scheme in Delaware to continue.
Exactly right. Unfortunately, with some of the votes that were cast in November, we have enabled this. And the buyer's remorse set in relatively quickly. Everybody's willing to be part of a team. And when times get tough, we all get in that foxhole together and we fight. But the only ones in that foxhole are the middle-class working Pennsylvanians, and guess who's standing out there shooting at them? It's the 1%, the haves versus the have-nots, a classic struggle here. And when you look at what Mr. Corbett has done with the sweetheart deals, the advisory panels, the Marcellus Shale team, which is stacked with big oil donors, unconscionable. We want you guys to go roll up your sleeves. We want you guys to take the hit. We're going to continue to make millions, and we're going to reward our friends at your expense.
Yeah,
unfortunate.
Yeah, I agree. And on Monday, he was in Washington, D.C., our governor. And thanks to the taxpayers, they footed the bill for him to, you know, have his escort down there, the police escort, and the transportation down to basically a fundraising event with the American Federation for Children and their attack model on education. But he went down there to attack teachers. He went down there to push this privatization of education scheme, this voucher thing, which we know is going to cost us about $1 billion over 10 years, at a time when he's talking about slashing and burning public education. I don't get it.
Neither do we. In fact, if your listeners go to our webpage, www.padems.com, they'll see the press release that we issued about the fact that he had to run to Washington, because even some of his most diehard supporters here in Pennsylvania ran for cover when they saw the dynamic of this one. They wanted nothing to do with it. You're absolutely right. This one just doesn't make any sense in any way you slice it or dice it or in any context in which Mr. Corbett or his administration attempt to frame it. I think that one's going to be the more pressure, the more our listeners, the more middle class Pennsylvanians can raise their voices in protest to this, the better our chances of beating this one back sooner rather than later.
But here's the thing that gets me, and this is the thing I think people need to really focus on. This push towards privatization, this push towards this lottery system of vouchers, this is not a movement inside the state of Pennsylvania. This is something that's funded by the big deep pockets in the billionaire class in Florida and in Kansas and in Wisconsin.
Absolutely. What we're seeing here is not indigenous to the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. You are exactly right. It is part of a vast movement that has its roots in other states, and it is being funded by the same basic contingency of billionaires that are going to, if we don't pay attention, unfortunately, be effective in this. They're going to get ahead of us on messaging. If we allow it, they're going to get ahead of us on grassroots if we allow it. The Pennsylvania Democratic Party in the last year since we've changed administration has built itself up with directors, messaging, grassroots efforts to fight back when something like this takes place in our Commonwealth. And we will fight back with working middle-class Pennsylvanians. We will fight back with our friends in the labor movement to keep this from growing any further. We'll do our best, and we have to be successful to kill this before it grows any larger.
Well, I hope you do. Here's my problem, Jim. You know, as top dog over there at the Pennsylvania Democratic Party, I think you have to get your own house in order first. And I look at, you know, somebody like Senator Williams or Representative Evans, who seem to be fully on board with this voucher scheme. How do you rein them in? I got to be honest. I look to them and I say, you know, there's trouble for the party.
Well, good question. What you call trouble for the party, I call diversity in the party. We welcome everyone, and even when we have ideas that like these two leaders in Philadelphia, who quite frankly are not mainstream with the general consensus of the party. Most folks in the party do not share their view. Most folks in the party will not stand with them on this one. And at the end of the day, we will continue to move forward with what we think is a position that is more consistent with what Pennsylvania needs versus what Pennsylvania cannot afford.
Yeah, I mean, because at the end of this, for me, and maybe you'll disagree with it, as a Democrat, I don't think privatization is a core Democratic value. I don't think privatizing what is the commons is what I consider being a core Democratic value. At least it's not mine.
No, and I agree. But again, the Democratic Party welcomes everybody with a diversity of ideas, even sometimes if those ideas oftentimes align themselves with our friends on the other side of the aisle. This is an example of that with the two specific individuals you mentioned, and I'm sure there are some others out there that may share that. I would suggest to you and your listeners and to the Democrats listening that they are, in fact, in the minority on this one, and the party is prepared to push back and push back hard to keep this from happening. When you talk about privatization, the state stores, what a horrible idea. A one-time influx of revenue, which the Republicans are grossly exaggerating, that you'll never see again in a time when we can't afford to be cutting off our revenue streams for one-time quick fixes.
Let me ask you a last question, last line of questioning I've got for you, Jim. You know, the governor has, in his budget, he laid out this idea of a Liberty Loan Fund out of one side of his mouth while he was beating up on the rest of the body politic over this walking around money. Do you think it's a bit hypocritical for the governor to want to have this big pot of money to dole out to his friends while pointing fingers at everyone else?
Well, it looks like a wham and talks like a wham and quacks like a wham. It's a wham. So, sure, he's gonna rid the Commonwealth of walking around money while creating a special account for himself. Look up hypocrisy in Webster's, and you'll see this plan with Mr. Corbett's face right next to it.
So how do we push back against all of this stuff? Because I got to be honest with you, you know, the more I look at what's going on here in Pennsylvania, and the last time we talked, I cited a Trib Review story that said the conservative wave missed Pennsylvania, but all I'm seeing across the street here is extreme bill after extreme bill that looks like it was written out of Cato or Heritage Foundation.
Raise awareness. A station like yours, raise awareness. The Democratic Party, raise awareness. The county chairs and our brothers and sisters in labor in all the 67 counties, continue to have conversations like this, continue to push back hard. And it's been effective. I mean, we have tripled his negatives in 2 months. Actually, no. He has tripled his negatives. They are tripled because of what he has done, A, and B, what you and the party and others who share our concerns about the future of the state have done to get that message to the residents and business owners of this Commonwealth. As long as we continue to be effective in our messaging, we will get those numbers up. And these guys, they're all about their own self-interest. When the Republicans in the Senate and in the House see his negatives, he will have a George Bush effect on their reelection efforts next year. They will start to run for cover from these outrageous ideas because we will not allow them to get away with it.
Let's hope so. And you got to find this governor where he's at and protest him where he goes, like they did in Washington, and like they're going to do on May 22nd at 1:30 at Albright College. Evidently, they're having their commencement day that day, and there's going to be a demonstration May 22nd at 1:30 there at Albright College. I encourage everyone to come out, all of my Democratic friends. And Jim, if you could push that along to all the Democrats across the state, it'd be great to see thousands of people show up at Albright College on May 22nd.
We certainly will do that, and if I may ask for the favor in return, is some of these battles oftentimes end up in the courts, especially some of our administrative battles in workers' compensation, unemployment compensation. We have a great candidate, Kathy Buchvar, for Commonwealth Court. Oftentimes, our judge candidates don't get the attention. There's executive races, there's mayor's races. Our judges, when these fights get into the courts, we need people on those benches that will give us a fair shake. Kathy Buchvar, David Wecht for Commonwealth and Superior, they are good, fair jurists, and we know if we ever get into the courts in Superior or Commonwealth, Kathy Buchvar and David Wecht will give us the fair shake.
Well, feel free to pass our name along. We'd love to have him on for Candidate Monday. We're having as many candidates in the local area and across the state as we can have on the program to get that out. So if you want to pass it along, it'd be great.
I will do that this evening, my friend. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thanks so much, Jim. Have a great night. Jim Byrne, Executive Director of the Pennsylvania Democratic Party. We're going to take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Radio of, for, and by we, the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
If your job paid $50,000 a year and you stayed at it for 47 years, your total tally for a lifetime of work would be $2.4 million. Not bad, but hedge fund hustler John Paulson pulled down that much last year. Most of us would consider an annual income of $2.4 million to be a windfall. But it didn't take Paulson a full 12 months of work to pocket his windfall, or 1 month, a week, or even a day. That's how much he made an hour. Yes, Paulson could have worked one single hour in 2010 and hauled off a paycheck equal to what a typical household gets for a lifetime of work. Now, guess who gets the lower tax rate? The $50,000 a year family, or the $2.4 million an hour Wall Street man? Right. Thanks to a loophole big enough to drive an armored truck through, billionaire hedge fund dealers like Paulson escape the usual 35% tax rate, instead paying, at most, 15%. That's more than wrong. It's immoral. In Washington, Wall Street-backed Congress critters are working fervently to kill Medicare and defund everything from education to environmental protection, all on the grounds that the only way to cope with a growing federal deficit is to bulldoze programs that Americans count on. But look behind that lush hedge over there, and what'll you find? The 25 biggest hedge fund dealers who took $22 billion in pay last year. If just these 25 guys were taxed at the 35% rate, Congress would have an additional $4 billion this year to use for filling the deficit hole rather than gleefully throwing six seniors into it. This is Jim Hightower saying, since 1995, the total income of the 400 richest Americans has nearly quadrupled, yet the real tax rate they pay has been cut almost in half. America isn't broke. It's being gamed by super-rich tax dodgers.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Mark to turn America blue. Now let's keep it that way. The Rick Smith Show. This is the time. This is the place. For we are the future. There's not much love you.
You know, again, you know, I love talking to Jim Burke. You know, he seems like a good guy to me. The party seems to be moving in the right direction. They're doing the grassroots work that needs to be done. You know, but you know, at a certain point, they've you know, I love the idea of the big tent and all that, but at a certain point, there are core democratic values, I think, and privatization is not one of them. This idea that, you know, the free market will solve all of our problems, for me, not the answer. And when you've got Democrats who are out there pushing, I got a problem with that. I absolutely do. And, you know, whatever the reason, I do believe that public education should stay in the hands of the people. And if you've got problems with different school districts, and obviously there are problems in certain areas, you deal with them. You don't just throw up your hands and say, well, let some private for-profit interest do it. And it's going to end up costing us a boatload of money down the road. You know, amazing stuff. Just amazing. Anyway, good news out of New Hampshire. Evidently, the governor of New Hampshire, Governor Lynch, he vetoed House Bill 474, which was that really just, again, a really destructive bill. It was going to make New Hampshire a right-to-work state. And again, you know, you look at this, these attacks all across the country. All across the country. Where they're going after the right of people to agree. I mean, they're interjecting government in between people. You know, the Republicans love to talk about health care and, well, they're going to put the government between you and your doctor. Well, what they're doing is they're putting the government between you and your employer, saying you can't be trusted to come to an agreement. You can't be trusted to collectively bargain. You can't be trusted because you people are too demanding. You're unreasonable because you want that health care and you want a reasonable share of the profit that you produce. How dare you? I mean, that's what it sounds like to me. And more and more, as you see these bills coming down the pike, like Fulmer's bill that I talked about earlier, they don't want to negotiate. They want to dictate. They like how the workplace is set up, which is the boss is the king. And the king dictates the working conditions, the wages, the benefits, how you're treated, when you come, when you go. They like that. They like that power. They like that king position. The only right that you have is whether you're going to come to work or not. Whether you're going to labor for them or not. And they want to take that right away as well. Amazing stuff to me, Jake. Just amazing. But the more you look at it, the more it is who they are. I could easily pay half the working class to kill the other half. They seem to know that quite instinctively. Anyway, there was a new poll out today. The USA Today Gallup poll, and they say a slim majority of Americans would like to see a third party. You know, we just talked to Jim Byrne, you know, good guy, but, you know, at the end of the day, I personally would love to see instant runoff voting. I would love to see a third party, and you got a slim majority of Americans who are saying, you know what, the Republican Party and the Democratic Party not doing such a great job. We'd like to see a third party in there. Now, I don't want a third party that's going to win with 34% of the vote. That's where I think that's a failure. Because you come into office with two-thirds of the people hating you. I think you need to have some type of instant runoff. Where you vote for your first choice and your second choice, if you don't get 50%, you go to the instant runoff. To me, that is rational. And that would make it, because you didn't like Ralph Nader after the 2000 election, that would have made your vote for Nader still count. But when Bush didn't get 51%, they'd kick all of the Nader votes back out, they'd recalculate them, and whoever got 50% plus one, they're the winner. That's how I think things should go.
Well, I mean, let's be honest. There's been some heavy-handedness by both the Republican and Democratic parties when it comes to third parties. I think some of the guidelines, for instance, for petition signers are unreasonable. And that's, one can only conclude that that's simply a mechanism for them to protect their power. Does that say a lot about our democracy? Well, I think it takes away from our democracy. I think the easier it is for people to run, the easier it is for people to form political parties, the better it is in the long run for democracy. But again, a power only accedes to power.
68% say they would like to see a third party. But again, you know, it comes back down to, you know, what we've talked about in the past. There's part of me that would like to see open primaries. That, you know, I have the opportunity to vote for the crazy Republican, just like the crazy Republican has the right to vote for the Democrat. There are some problems with it, but at the end of the day, there's part of me that thinks that, you know, voting is a good thing.
That's a common sense proposal to change the system for the better. Now, there have been some suggestions from within labor to try to form a labor party. I'm not so sure that would work in this country. I think you'd be to pretty much delineating your vote, and I think you'd make it easier for the most part, the Republicans to win. We support some Republicans, but for the most part, we support Democrats. And I do believe, as it is now, the way the country is now, I think all you'd be doing is delineating your vote.
I support the people who support me. That is that simple. And if that means, you know, there's a Republican who says these vouchers are a bad idea, there's a guy who I'm gonna side with. If there's a Democrat who says these vouchers are a good idea, somebody I'm not gonna support. If you see one Democrat vote for this Scott Perry bill, this unemployment compensation insurance bill that he's trying to put out there to destroy the unemployment system. There will be one Democrat that will never see a vote from me or hopefully from any working person. Just like I'm hoping the working folks there in Dillsburg give their representative a call and have a conversation with him and say, look, you know, we voted for you for a reason. You said you're going to create jobs. Where is that? The Republicans came into power claiming they were going to be the jobs party, the paycheck party. Yet they've done nothing. Nothing whatsoever. And I got to be honest, that's scary stuff.
Well, again, Rick, you hit it on the nose. They're good at electioneering, and they've done it better than Democrats, no question about it. But when it comes to governance, no. Very, very poor. Very poor on the state level and the national level. And I hope, and I can honestly say this. I've talked to a lot of people in the last couple of months, knocking on doors, and I have to say this: I think there's a new awareness out there. Most people, when you talk about politics, they are alarmed. They do not like what is happening, and I hope that resonates throughout the country. And
they've overreached.
I hope in Pennsylvania and in the United States that we take our government back.
Well, they've overreached, and you knew they would. Anytime you give them that much power. And you knew it was going to happen. They have gone to the extreme. They have allowed the radicals to take over. The Perrys and the Metcalfs and the Turdseyes, all of these extremists who are proposing this way out drastic change to the way things are done in this state, they have gone too far.
Well, here in Pennsylvania, unfortunately, and I never thought of it before, to be quite frank. You look at Michigan, you look at Wisconsin. They have a method within their constitution to deal with radical government. The recall in Michigan, they have a process where they can forestall some dangerous legislation. But in this state, I think we seriously need to look at that. But again, the very people who are benefiting from the system need to change the system. But we need a vehicle in this state. If there's someone like Corbett or someone even more extreme that takes over, there has to be a vehicle that the people won't have to wait 4 years. Whatever that is, referendum or, I mean, there's several different ways to address it. But I think Pennsylvania seriously needs to look at, for lack of a better word, Rick, a safety valve.
Anyway, what has to happen, I think, now is people have to get to the streets. And that's what we're going to see tomorrow in New York under the banner of Stop the Cuts and Make Big Banks and Millionaires Pay. They're going to be going out in New York. The citizens of New York are going to be going out on the Wall Street and demanding that sacrifice is truly, truly shared. So when we come back, we're going to talk with Greg Basta at his website on May 12th.org. That is tomorrow, the big rally against the austerity cuts. We're back after this.
Where family values are more than slogans. The Rick Smith Show.
SECU, we know those holiday bills can really pile up and hit you with double-digit interest rates or fees that start to snowball. Next thing you know, you're buried in a mountain of debt. Dig out by using our 3.9 annual percentage rate Visa balance transfer, good through December 31st, 2012. That's a really big deal. And you heard that right. Our really big deal, 3.9% APR, is good through December 31st, 2012. And we don't charge you a balance transfer fee. So if you used any other credit card to pay for your holiday purchases, move those high-interest rate balances to your PSECU Visa. The sooner you get in on this really big deal, the more you'll save. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or go to pscu.com/life to get in on our really big deal Visa balance transfer. Don't wait. Start saving.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration. Equal Opportunity Lender.
Hi, I'm Bob Snyder, president of Teamsters Local 776 here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. For more than 100 years, Teamsters have been standing together to create a better tomorrow. We Teamster members are your friends and neighbors. Teamsters move goods across the nation, take care of seniors, serve and protect our community, and so much more. We are hardworking, dedicated professional workers, united to make our lives, our communities, and our nation stronger. If you want to be part of the team, join the Teamsters for a better tomorrow. Contact us at 1-800-692-6280. That's 1-800-692-6280. Or visit our website at TeamstersLocal776.org. We are people helping people.
Since the investor class, diving for their tax shelters. Rick Smith.
At every trough you stop to feed, with your arrogance, your ignorance and greed. Now here come the cuts and redundancy. Through the absolute indifference, the avarice, incompetence, your arrogance, your ignorance, your greed.
Well, you know, we know here in the state that, you know, our governor wants to cut $1 billion from K through 12 education, 56% from higher education. The House Republicans want to slash a boatload of money from public welfare. They want to set up a nice pot of gold for the governor to hand out flowers to his constituents and his contributors, but they want us to bear the burden of it. And I've been calling for people to march in the streets, come to the Capitol, and have your voices heard. And we're seeing it all around the country. New York is the next place. Today in California, 65 people were arrested when they were out in the streets. Tomorrow in New York on Wall Street, groups including New York Communities for Change will be out under the banner of Stop the Cuts and Make Big Banks and Millionaires Pay to demand true shared sacrifice. I've asked Greg Basta. He is with the New York Communities for Change group, the website that they're pushing people on, May12th.org, talking about tomorrow's march. Greg, thanks for taking time for me.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Rick.
You know, I look at the name of your group, New York Communities for Change. I think there's some change going on in your fair city there with the massive cuts.
Yeah, well, you know, we learned last week that New York is just like the rest of the country, where they're force feeding us this notion of austerity as the means of righting the economy. So last week, Mayor Bloomberg announced over $400 million in cuts to services that New Yorkers, hardworking New Yorkers, and the most vulnerable in our city are relying on. So things like closing down firehouses and libraries, but also cuts to senior centers, cuts to homeless shelters, cuts to medical and housing services for folks that have HIV/AIDS, and on top of it all, layoffs to over 4,000 teachers in the city. You know, and right in our backyard, we have the six big banks on Wall Street who are making a profit of $199 million per day. And these banks are, you know, benefiting, they benefited from the bailouts. They're benefiting from tax loopholes where they're paying nothing or next to nothing in corporate taxes and sweetheart deals with the city. So, you know, we've said enough is enough. What On May 12th is about, it's a major coalition of the biggest and best labor organizations, community organizations, human services organizations, and student organizations coming together to fight back, to teach in, meet up, and tell the big banks to pay their fair share.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Let me ask you this. You said the mayor wants to cut $400 million in services and wages and stuff. Let me ask you, how much money has he spent on the three elections that he ran? I remember the one time they were talking, it was almost $100 a vote. How much has he spent personally on just getting elected?
You know, and what's funny is that, I mean, not only is it just an astronomical number, he didn't win by much in his last election. It kind of scared him. But, you know, of course, he's the mayor that, you know, only earns a dollar a year, as he likes to claim.
Yeah, but here's my point, and the reason I bring it up is he's spent a couple $100 million getting elected. He's someone who's got really deep pockets. You've got the wealthiest street in the country on the planet. You've got the wealthiest street on the planet. I'm sorry, I don't know that your city should be cutting programs to help seniors and children. Just not getting it.
The biggest lie that's being passed around is that this city is broke. This city is not broke. You know, we have, you're right, we have Wall Street. We have the huge banks that are making record-setting profits, that are giving their CEOs record-setting bonuses, while hardworking New Yorkers, the working poor, are sacrificing. And tomorrow we're going to make sure that this starts to change. As we like to say, tomorrow is not the end of the May 12th campaign, it's just the beginning.
I mean, here's the thing. Your Main Street is Wall Street.
Exactly. Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, it's, you know, that's why it makes sense for us to be out there marching, thousands of us doing teach-ins. The way it's working tomorrow is we have 8 assembly sites around Wall Street, all pertaining to certain topics. So we have a housing teach-in that's going to be going on, talking about how the banks have decimated our city with the foreclosure crisis. And, you know, we're dealing with cuts to affordable housing programs. We're going to have education sites dealing with, you know, cuts to public education, the teacher layoffs, as well as cuts to our city universities. We're going to have a human services site. You know, so we're going to be doing separate teach-ins around Wall Street on these, you know, on these particular topics, where we're going to be doing teach-ins at locations that I'm not going to talk about right now. You'll have to come to the rally and find out, you know, what's going on. But then we're all going to join together and march in solidarity and do the largest teach-in this country's ever seen.
That sounds fantastic. All under the banner of stop the cuts and make big banks and millionaires pay. Because after all, the reality is your street, that Main Street in your town there that we know as Wall Street, they're the reason that this country's in the economic calamity, the collapse that it's in right now.
Yeah, Rick, that's a great point. I mean, while this is obviously about the cuts that Bloomberg announced last week, this is not just a New York City issue. This is a nationwide issue. I mean, you know, the tax loopholes that they're benefiting from, these are, you know, those are federal taxes. So it's the same, you know, the same tax sweetheart deals that the banks are getting that are affecting Wisconsin, Indiana, Florida, nationwide. So this is a national movement. It's not just a New York City movement.
Which is the reason that I asked you to come on, because I think it's important that folks in our listening area see what other people are doing in communities across this country to know how to respond to the deep, drastic, draconian cuts that are going on in our local and state governments. We're going to have to rise up and fight back, much as you guys are doing out there with New York Communities for Change and all of the groups who are participating in the onmay12th.org event under the banner of Stop the Cuts, Make Big Banks and Millionaires Pay.
Yes, and you know, so folks know in your listening area, you can definitely get involved tomorrow if you can't make it down to New York City. You know, we're going to be doing virtual rallies throughout the day. We're on Twitter. We're using we're using the hashtag on May 12th. So you can, use that and get your message out. Go to our Facebook site, facebook.com/onmay12. Everyone can get involved however they can, for tomorrow.
Let me ask you, what do you do for a living?
I am a campaign director for New York Communities for Change. We're a community organization, fighting for social and economic justice for, low-income communities in New York City.
It sounds like a great thing. The reason I ask is because, I'm trying to get people to realize that, being part of a community group, being part of these rallies are something that everybody can do. It doesn't matter what you do for a living or where you come from. It's about having your voice heard, out in the street and producing a better tomorrow for our children.
Yep, absolutely. I mean, what's been really inspiring about all this is, all the organizations in New York City, we have our constituents, we have our base that we're turning out to these events, but we also have over 5,000 Facebook fans in just the last couple of weeks that aren't folks from our organizations. They're folks that just heard what we're doing and, are coming out tomorrow.
Well, because I think most people feel helpless. I think, you look at what's going on like here in Pennsylvania. We got a governor, as I said, wants to cut $1 billion from K-12 education, wants to cut 56% of the higher ed budget, wants to set up a privatization scheme with vouchers to hand out another $1 billion to his campaign contributors. And people feel, what can I do? The power is against me because Republicans control everything in our state government. There's no opposition party here, and they feel helpless.
Yeah, listen, let's face it, it's not just the Republicans. We started dealing with this a couple of months ago when our Democratic governor in New York, Andrew Cuomo, announced major austerity cuts, affecting education and affecting services throughout the state as well. So, we have our hands full, but I think the tide is starting to turn. You're seeing a lot of real frustration and real rage towards these big banks and corporations that are not paying their fair share.
Yeah, I wish you guys nothing but the best of luck. Will you be covering this on Ustream? Will they be able to watch video and participate that way?
That's my job tomorrow. We have a command center. We'll be posting, live as we get it in, video, pictures, live tweets. Yes, everyone can follow. Go to facebook.com/onmay12. Go to onmay12.org, and you can follow along with us.
And we will put a link on our site at therickSmithShow.com. Just click on Greg Bass's name. It'll take you right over there. Greg, I appreciate the conversation. Keep up the fight, and I look forward to seeing what goes on tomorrow.
Thanks, Rick. We appreciate it.
Yeah, you look at this, and Jake, I this is the kind of stuff that has to happen right here. This is the kind of organization. This is the kind of mobilization, the grassroots work that has to be done right here at home.
About to go to the streets. Got to go to the streets. You got to let the legislators know.
Anyway, let's take a quick break. When we come back, your calls 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Right back.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Ask me, Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? Ask Me Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, Ask Me Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
Exposing GOP half-truths, lies, and hypocrisy every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Rick Smith.
Everything's raisin, but the weight is. Everything's raisin, but the weight is. Gasoline, groceries, and our hate is. Everything's raisin, but the weight is.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website at TheRickSmithShow.com. Also, you can email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. I do answer all emails personally. And if you miss any portion of the program, just go to our site and download the podcast there for your convenience, entertainment, and enjoyment. You know, you look at what's going on in New York and a lot of cities, to be honest, a lot of states across this country, they keep telling us that we're broke. There's no money out there. We're broke, flat broke, country's broke. We can't pay our light bill, you know, can't put food on the billionaire children's table. Can't do that. We're broke. Yet you look at the Koch brothers and the story that I talked about yesterday, them handing money over to Florida State University to have a say on who the economics department hires as professors for $1.5 million. I mean, you stop and think about what the Florida State University budget must be. I mean, it's got to be $100 million. So you look at $1.5 million is not an awful lot of money. Yet, for just that little bit, these billionaires have say over what professors stand in front of those students to teach economics. And you go down the list, and, you know, Florida State came out, as the story, and now we're finding out more and more. We're finding out more and more that the Koch brothers are spending huge sums of money. What's interesting is this thing with Florida State started way back in 2008. It's been going on for a while. Just nobody bothered to pick up on it. Every once in a while, I get these requests by these right-wingers to come on the program, which I try and bring them on until they find out that I'm going to challenge them. But there's this George Mason University that's got this Mercatus Center, completely funded by the Koch brothers. You go down the list of the universities, and Think Progress did a very nice job of this. The West Virginia University, they sponsored this professor, this Russell Sobel, who wrote a book blasting any regulation. There's no such thing as a good regulation. And in fact, Sobel went so far in West Virginia. Stop and think about money well spent. You've got a professor at a very reputable university in West Virginia saying that less mine safety regulations would make the coal industry safer. By having less regulations, the mines would be safer for the workers. Stop and think about that for a second. By having no oversight, it's going to be safer. They went to Brown University and spent almost $500,000 underwriting a number of research projects. You never hear about who's funding this stuff. That's why I always ask, who's behind this project? Troy University, they gave about over three and a half million dollars to establish their Center for Political Economy. Which again, you go back and you start looking at all these names and all these groups who are just hauled in the Koch brothers' pockets. Utah State University, another one, $750,000 to set up their Huntsman School of Business. Which again, more of this right-wing ideology, more of this free market, laissez-faire, regulations bad. free market's good, invisible hand good. You know, I've been getting the invisible hand for a long time with the finger pointed at me. You know, for too long, we've been getting the invisible fist, and I'm not talking about, you know, the one that's standing up. I'm talking about the verb. And what we're doing to our children. I mean, I stop and think about my kids. I'm 44 years old. Never in my school years, and I thought back to this pretty hard. Never during my school years did private for-profit corporations enter into my education. Now, when I played football, you know, some of the sporting goods stores would give you equipment and stuff. That was different. Not in the classroom. My daughter, it never fails that my daughter comes home with something regularly, at least once a week, that has something from a corporation on it. If it's not the Pizza Hut reading program, it's the, you know, the comprehension Applebee's program, or it's this program, or Coke, or Pepsi, or you name it, they're marketed to at every level. When I stop and think back, I mean, the first time I was exposed to the whole corporatization thing was when I went away to college. And in the dorm, they had a little care package that they gave out with, you know, with shaving cream and razors and brand-specific stuff that you were going to need that these companies gave to the schools to get you hooked on their product, because they knew that if you started using this kind of shaving cream, chances are you were going to continue. And you know what? I do. I still use Edge shaving cream because that's what was in the box. And that was 1986. They understand this. They get the marketing. And they know that the earlier they can get to the kids, if they can get to them in preschool, so much better yet, because they can market to them. This is what's going on in education. And, you know, they just passed the employer incentive tax credit or whatever it is, so businesses can then give more money to schools and be tax deductible, so that you and I are paying for them giving money to private schools. Again, injecting corporations into our children's education. What's going to happen when we have a fully privatized system where for-profit corporations run by people like the Koch brothers and the DeVosses? What's going to happen to those classrooms? This table and chair is brought to you by XYZ Corporation. This blackboard brought to you by Blackboards, Inc. Or am I just being paranoid? You know, I miss that. I completely miss that as a kid. You know, weekend cartoons had commercials. But now children are a target. Our children are a target. And we're allowing it to happen. In fact, we're encouraging it to happen. You know, this EITC thing they passed, this employer incentive tax credit, where they can give, I think, up to $300,000 they can write off of their Pennsylvania taxes by giving it to private schools. Or opportunity scholarships, as they like to say. Are they interjecting that into your kids' lives? Because that's what scares me, man. I'm worried that we've indoctrinated our kids, and maybe it's just that I'm not digital. But this constant berating. You know, every time my daughter gets something, there's a corporate logo has to be on it, and it's only going to get worse. The farther down that rabbit hole we go, the further down we go, the harder it's going to be to come back. And that's what scares me, Jake.
What's happening in Florida State, as bad as what you talked about with your daughter, to me, what is sinister is to allow one political ideology to decide what's going to be taught at the university. Now, I guess my question is, certainly Florida State, by implications, it's Florida State University. They absolutely must, and I'm sure they do, get funds from the state. Where is the state? Why would they allow that to happen? Why would they allow a very wealthy donor to dictate who is going to teach at that school? You're giving away your independence. You're giving away your sovereignty.
Well,
you're selling yourself.
Sovereignty. What you're giving away is the integrity of your institution.
You call it what you want. Sovereignty in the sense that you have control, Rick. It's obviously a bad move. It just smacks of we're going towards a society where fewer and fewer and fewer people are deciding all the important things in our life.
Well, that's what I'm worried about. And I stop and I think about my children, and that's what bothers me. This whole push towards privatization, towards profitizing education. This whole we need to bring more business interests in. That's something that's really scary to me. And this thing with the Koch brothers, again, you go down the list of all of these, and I guess it's something we always knew. That, you know, when you look at the Chicago school, they're pretty well conformed to their way of thinking, and they get a lot of funding from people like the Koch brothers, I'm sure. But when it's blatant like this, where for a mere pittance of $1.5 million, they have veto power over the professors that the school may want to hire. That to me is just mind blowing. And it's such a small amount of money. And you could take that into our politics as well. The small amount of money that goes into lobbying these representatives, and the small amount of money that the Koch brothers said, they spend more money on cancer research, and they do, than they do on politics, but politics seems to pay off more, because look at all of the things, all of the dreams that, you know, their father wanted when he started funding the John Birch Society. I mean, stop and think about this whole movement and how methodical and on message they have been, how disciplined to their playbook. And right now, they have, you know, they're celebrating the big score, because 40, 50 years worth of planning and plodding along and funding authors and speakers and radio programs and TV and all of this, funding all of this stuff is now paying off. Because you've got an American populace who I believe suffers from Stockholm syndrome. They're identifying with their captors. I think that the average working class person identifies with the Koch brothers more than they do someone who's unemployed or who's struggling on welfare, which to me is appalling. But that's where we seem to be stuck in. And I threw this up to a couple people today. You know, this story about the Koch brothers funding this Florida State University thing. And people were like, meh, you know, most of the people I met were, meh, meh. This is what it is. Instead of being outraged like I am, I'm absolutely outraged that the academic integrity of a major U.S. university is being harmed for such a small amount. And you look at the money that goes into our politics, I mean, on the grand scale, to these people, it's a small amount. I mean, stop and think of how much money the Koch brothers were into Scott Walker for, and what Walker's going to deliver for them.
It would be interesting to know who's on their board of regents. First of all, it's allowing it. Now, you can get into the culpability of the state legislature, which I think would have a lot of leverage, but who is on the board of regents that would allow that? Be very interesting to find out.
I don't know. But at the end of the day, what this is going to come down to is, you know, we've got to get money out of politics. And the disclosure of that money is what I think is important. And the president has come out with this idea that, you know, we're going to make corporations who do business with the federal government disclose who they're giving money to these secret attack groups. We should know. I'm in favor of transparency, open and honest transparency. The sunshine will set us free. That's my belief. When we come back, we're going to talk with Daniel Newman, co-founder and executive director of MapLight, a group that, you know, we need more of. We're right back after this.
Blue in an ocean of red. Rick Smith.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
American Rights at Work Director Kimberly Freeman Brown says attacks on the National Labor Relations Board by South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley, Republicans in Congress, and the U.S. Chamber of Commerce are more about politics than the economy. The NLRB drew the attacks for its legal complaint against Boeing, alleging that Boeing illegally moved work to South Carolina to punish unions in Washington State for past strikes. American Rights at Work says the NLRB is just protecting workers' rights under federal law, ensuring that unions and businesses play by the rules. A bill banning collective bargaining for state employees may be dying on the vine in Colorado. State House Republicans there need all of their 33 members in the House to pass the bill, and they don't have the votes. The session ends today. The bill was approved by a Colorado House committee Friday, but has languished since. Two previous anti-union bills were killed in state Senate committees. Republican Colorado State Representative Keith Swerdfeger says he can't vote for this anti-collective bargaining bill, partly because he owns a contracting business that's been union for 40 years. The California Federation of Teachers is marching, protesting, staging grade-ins and other actions through Friday, protesting the defunding of public education in California. The CFT is calling for approval of California Governor Jerry Brown's tax extensions package, which includes a 1% surtax on the richest 1% of Californians. Diane Wilson has been fighting irresponsible corporations for more than 20 years, and this month she released the book, Diary of an Eco-Outlaw, An Unreasonable Woman Breaks the Law from Mother Earth. Jesse Russell has more.
One of Wilson's most well-known battles has been with BP over the 2010 oil spill. Wilson comes from a family with a 100-year history of shrimping in the Gulf Coast, so the spill impacted her personally. During the BP hearing, she brought attention to the plight of fishermen in the Gulf when she covered her body in syrup and tended to look like oil. Wilson said such tactics are necessary because the fight between everyday people and corporations isn't equal. She started down her path after feeling powerless, so now she brings her issues straight to the top whenever possible.
They were made accountable, then we would not see a lot of the things that we do, because right now they're getting away with murder. They're literally getting away with murder.
Wilson said the fishermen in the Gulf still aren't being respected. Instead, they're being vilified. According to Wilson, BP representatives have been telling the EPA that the only reason fishermen haven't been going back to work is because they're lazy.
But he was saying that the problem with these shrimpers and why they were still complaining and why they were talking about health impacts and why they wouldn't go shrimping, it's just because these people are lazy people and they're just looking for a handout.
This newscast made possible in part by the American Federation of Teachers, a union of professionals.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit Labor Radio.
Sanity for a change. The Rick Smith Show.
If you think that I don't know about the little tricks you play, I'll never see you when you live with me quickly in my way. Well, here's a poke at you. You're gonna choke on it too. You're gonna lose that smile because all the while I can see for miles.
And welcome back, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. The president evidently is passing around his draft of the executive order we've been talking about for some time, stating that anyone who does any work for the federal government, they need to reveal who their funding political candidates with, the money, where it's going, third parties, all of that stuff. The kind of transparency that I think is important in any functional democracy. There's an argument to be made about ours, but we have an opportunity. That's why I've asked Daniel Newman. He's co-founder and executive director of MapLight, the website maplight.org. Their slogan, Money and Politics, Illuminating the Connections. Daniel, thanks for taking time for me.
Hey, it's nice to be here, Rick.
You know, I'm looking at this executive order, and I've been hoping for it for some time. I gotta be honest, the money in politics is just corrosive, and this last election really highlighted just how bad it's going to get, I think, in the coming years if we do nothing.
Yeah, I've got to agree with you. I mean, the big change in the last election is you've got secret money flowing in, and that was started, and we're going to see even more of it the last election in the wake of the Citizens United Supreme Court decision a bit over a year ago.
So the Republicans are basically losing their mind over this potential executive order because, you know, they know where their money's coming from. It's being flowed through these secret groups, and I don't think they, you know, look, they don't want to give up their flow of cash. And what's the argument against it?
You know, I really think that, you know, more disclosure is good. I mean, you know, I run a transparency organization, and as Justice Brandeis said in the past, sunlight is the best disinfectant. And I just don't see anything wrong with forcing government contractors to have to put on these forms that they fill out the political donations they give. I mean, they already have to give, you know, references and pages of information. I mean, we, the taxpayers, are buying stuff from them. I mean, it's perfectly reasonable to ask for disclosure. I mean, the alternative is secret funding of our democracy, and who wants that except for the people that want to fund it?
Well, the Koch brothers.
Yeah. Well, there we go. You have a couple people that want it, but everybody else, you know, all the people, all of us think, you know, people should know.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, in the last segment, we were talking about the Koch brothers funding Florida State University, a mere $1.5 million to have veto power over the hiring of professors in their economics department.
Yeah, so you're getting into the question of, like, should democracy be for sale? I mean, you look at, you know, MapLight Research, this is the money given to members of Congress and how those members of Congress vote, and we found that over and over again we find an alignment of the donations and the votes, and it's not so much a partisan thing, it's how the system is set up. Like, we looked at around the healthcare reform, the U.S. Senate voted to prevent Americans from importing prescription drugs from other countries where they're less expensive. And we found that the senators who voted with the drug companies to block imports got 70% more money from the drug companies. And that was Democrats and Republicans both.
Right. And the argument for people that I've known who've served in Congress have said it's, well, you know, they give us money because we believe in that to start with, not because they gave us money to believe it.
Well, and oftentimes that's true. But what it means is if you have, like, the drug company-friendly candidate and the consumer-friendly candidate, and they're both running for office in Pennsylvania, which one is going to have the money to get their message out and to put their ads on the air? It's the drug industry-friendly candidate. So the industries buy seats in Congress, even if each individual person doesn't change their vote.
So that brings us to the question of, you know, our dollars votes and our corporations people.
Well, I mean, the answer is no and no, obviously, despite what the Supreme Court might try and say.
Because that's the argument the right always uses, that, you know, people are voting with their dollars.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of things that are for sale in our market economy and should be for sale. And, you know, most anything you buy at the store. But, the difference in the democracy is that, you know, each person is supposed to have an equal vote and equal voice. And as we all know, you know, money is not distributed equally across society. And this is a particular problem for corporations because that's a, you know, that's an artificial entity created by the government to concentrate wealth for certain purposes that are supposed to be socially beneficial. And, you know, these legal creations, you know, to then go ahead and sort of affect the government themselves is really just the system run amok.
Well, let's talk about this executive order for a second. As you understand it, how's this going to work?
It's basically the bottom line is that government contractors who contribute over a small threshold for political contributions simply have to disclose them.
And the hope is?
I think it shines more light on money that is currently not surfaced but that is affecting our democracy.
Now, is it safe to say that the Republicans are correct and that this is partisanship? The president's just trying to strangle part of their funding mechanisms?
You know, I don't really see it, and frankly, I think it's unlikely that this is going to strangle anything. It just gives more of a window on what's actually going on. I mean, it's bad enough that wealthy interest groups continually fund our elections, but to have it be secret is just even worse. So it's, you know, I don't really see the argument that this is sort of, you know, punishing or anything. I mean, it's the whole principle of democracy is open information. Even the principle of free speech is sort of like more speech is better. So, like, more information about what's being disclosed is only going to help our democracy. The only people it's going to hurt is people who want to operate in the shadows but still by members of Congress.
Yeah, I agree. You know, here's the thing. But beyond this executive order, doesn't this beg the question of why we don't have stronger campaign finance laws?
The reason we don't have stronger campaign finance laws is because the Democrats and Republicans don't really want it. That's basically it. It's like the people versus the powerful kind of thing.
Right.
I mean, take the Disclose Act in the last Congress. So that was a proposed measure that basically was very straightforward. It said that, you know, all the money given in political campaigns has to be disclosed. It didn't even limit it. It just said it has to be public so citizens can know who's paying for our legislators. And yet the Democrats, you know, who control the majorities, like, did not pass this. And, you know, sure, the Republicans filibusters and stuff, but the fact is that the Democrats didn't really want it to pass. You know, they brought out some of their best arguments after the thing had already failed. Like, well, wouldn't this, you know, foreign countries could influence our elections if we don't know who's funding them. But they didn't sort of make this case on the floor to kind of, you know, move things forward. So, you know, I'm kind of personally disgusted with both parties and sort of their lack of action on that.
And it's easy to be disgusted with the whole system. And that part of me believes that's what they want. That's what they want. They want a bunch of people to throw up their hands, turn a blind eye, and say, they're all crooks, and just ignore the whole scenario.
It is. And so, you know, and so you know, what I would point to is lots of cases of successes. So you have like New York City, you know, not too far from where you are. At least from my end of the country here in California, has a system of public funding of local races. So city candidates, you know, even if you're not wealthy, but if you're a community leader and you have people willing to work for your campaign, and you can get a set amount of money to run your campaign. You get, you know, small donations matched by a city fund, and so it equalizes the playing field. It's not just about money; it's about experience and leadership and what people think of you, which is the way it should be. And, you know, Maine, Arizona, other states have similar systems where the people running and winning don't have to depend on special interest money. And so there is another way to do this, and it's, you know, that people in power don't necessarily want you to know this, but it is tested and working in other places.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of a couple ideas, publicly financed elections being one of them, and instant runoff voting being another.
Absolutely. So that decreases the cost to run a campaign. Like where I live near Oakland, California, there's actually the first ever instant runoff election for mayor, and the big money candidate actually lost because, you know, in the past there would have been a runoff election like 2 months after the main election. You know, money would have ruled the day and getting out of the mailings, but here you had a candidate that sort of was grassroots, went door to door, and ended up victorious.
Because I do believe that, you know, I would love to have a choice in my vote. And a lot of times you feel that, you know, you're voting for the lesser of the evils because you don't want to throw your vote away at an ideological candidate. So you vote for one of the two. I would love to have that third option.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that you're bringing up here is these are systemic issues. And, you know, so often our politics is focused on, like, just this lawmaker or just, you know, this one who is caught being corrupt or something. And these are really systemic problems, like how the voting system is set up. Excuse me. And I think people need to realize that there's fundamental reasons why our politics are bad, but these things can be fixed.
I absolutely agree. You know, earlier you brought up the Chamber of Commerce, who, again, I think is the Republican hit squad. And during the last election cycle, it was believed that they were taking money from overseas and putting it into their general fund. Now, they claim they weren't spending it directly on elections, but still, you're getting money from all over the world. Again, I want to know where that money's coming from, where it's going. That kind of transparency to me is important.
It's vital. I mean, I think that really things can be sustainable the way they are and really have you know, our democracy continue. I think people are outraged by this, and rightly so. And I think, you know, there's simply no way to know what's really going on unless we, like, change the law to force disclosure. And I think I'm glad that the president is I hope he does issue this order and actually tackle this systemic issue.
Yeah, but how likely is it that our Supreme Court will then step in?
You know, it's really hard to say with these things. I mean, you know, the president has broad authority. I mean, he's the president and his executive branch are the ones spending the money, you know, so why, I don't know why they couldn't require this, but, you know, you never know what's going to happen.
Yeah, you never know. Where do you think this is, last question, where do you think this is going to go? Do you think he's going to push this through, or do you think this is going to be, there'll be a compromise somewhere to get some legislation through?
Well, you know, I think that, I don't know what's going to happen, but I think it's really in his interest to issue that. The first thing Obama did when he came to office, his first executive order was about transparency, and this is certainly in keeping with the theme of this. And second, I think that, Obama, you know, and his party will be more likely to benefit from more transparency. And I think, you know, the members of the public will be more likely to benefit. And that's true of, you know, Republicans and liberals both, not talking about the Republicans and liberals and Democrats in Congress, but, you know, all of us listening to the show, it's like, we all want to know what's going on. And, you know, the president does represent everyone. So I hope we will act on that.
I agree, because I want to know who's behind all of the attack ads I saw in November. I want to know who's behind all of the euphemistically named groups, Americans for Puppies or, you know, whatever. I think it's important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Anyway, Daniel Newman, I appreciate your time. Thanks so much. Co-founder and executive director of MapLight, maplight.org. Their slogan again, money and politics, illuminating the connections. Daniel, thanks so much.
My pleasure, Rick.
Alrighty, we're going to take a quick break. Right back after this, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
If your job paid $50,000 a year and you stayed at it for 47 years, your total tally for a lifetime of work would be $2.4 million. Not bad, but hedge fund hustler John Paulson pulled down that much last year. Most of us would consider an annual income of $2.4 million to be a windfall. But it didn't take Paulson a full 12 months of work to pocket his windfall, or 1 month, a week, or even a day. That's how much he made an hour. Yes, Paulson could have worked one single hour in 2010 and hauled off a paycheck equal to what a typical household gets for a lifetime of work. Now, guess who gets the lower tax rate? The $50,000 a year family, or the $2.4 million an hour Wall Street man? Right. Thanks to a loophole big enough to drive an armored truck through, billionaire hedge fund dealers like Paulson escape the usual 35% tax rate, instead paying, at most, 15%. That's more than wrong. It's immoral. In Washington, Wall Street-backed Congress critters are working fervently to kill Medicare and defund everything from education to environmental protection, all on the grounds that the only way to cope with a growing federal deficit is to bulldoze programs that Americans count on. But look behind that lush hedge over there, and what'll you find? The 25 biggest hedge fund dealers who took $22 billion in pay last year. If just these 25 guys were taxed at the 35% rate, Congress would have an additional $4 billion this year to use for filling the deficit hole, rather than gleefully throwing six seniors into it. This is Jim Hightower saying, since 1995, the total income of the 400 richest Americans has nearly quadrupled, yet the real tax rate they pay has been cut almost in half. America isn't broke. It's being gamed by super-rich tax dodgers.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Just when you thought it was safe, those crazy Republicans are at it again. It's time for the Rick Smith Show's Conservative Alerts.
You want to talk about crazy? You want to talk about crazy train? Just look to Wisconsin. Look to the Pennsylvania State House. Look to Indiana. Look to Ohio. Look at the state houses across this country that are controlled by the radical right. In Wisconsin right now, as we speak, they are working diligently to push through another one of these bills to restrict voting rights. Basically, in the state, in the state of Wisconsin, the only way you're going to be able to vote is with a driver's license. So if you don't have a driver's license or one of their photo IDs, you don't get to vote no matter how long you've been voting in that precinct, no matter what, you're done. And right now they're trying to push this through. And one of the statistics that I find very interesting is they're going to spend $7.5 million on a fraud that is 0.00006% of the voting. I don't know that that's really cost effective, especially if you remember the state was in such financial crisis that they had to steal collective bargaining rights away from their workers. They had to steal wages away from their workers because we got to spend $7.5 million on stopping a fraud that is 0.0000006%. But that's their goal, man. And again, it comes back down to how many people remember Paul Weyrich? He was the guy who started the Heritage Foundation. He was one of the co-founders of the Heritage Foundation. And this is what he had to say. Interesting.
Now, many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome. Good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
I mean, that is the Republican mantra. If we can suppress the vote, and you're seeing the same kind of bill going through the Pennsylvania legislature, if we can hold down the vote, if we can suppress those poor people, if we can suppress those elderly people, we can hold it down, we can win. Here in this state, the Democrats hold somewhere in the neighborhood of 1.2 million voter registration advantage. So if you can hold those down, you got a better shot of winning. And how better way to do that? Put some really restrictive measures onto that. Make them go get a, make people who don't have a car or a driver's license, make them go across town during daylight hours to get a photo ID when they don't live on the bus line. And it would be really difficult to get there. Make them go out of their neighborhoods. You know, I knew people growing up who never left their four or five blocks, never in their lives. That's where they stayed, in that neighborhood. They did everything in that neighborhood. They got married in that neighborhood. They raised their families in that neighborhood. They voted in that neighborhood. They never left. And you got these folks, these filthy, rotten, no good for nothing, backstabbing sleazeballs who want to steal their rights away. Why? As Weyrich said, our power goes up as the voting populace goes down. And it takes me back to one of the things that my government teacher always said. Don't bother voting. Don't bother voting. Just makes my vote that much stronger. And he's right. You know, the more that they can suppress, the more that they can hold back, the more that they can deny you your rights, disenfranchise you, hold you up at the voting poll, make you take provisional ballots, all of that, the more that they can do, the more frustrated they can make you, the better their chances. And look what happens when they win. Look what happens when conservatives control government. They destroy it. They starve it. And they hand out the spoils to the already well-to-do. That's what they do, man. And it never deviates from that, Jake. It never changes. That's their MO. Mm-hmm. We knew it from the beginning. It didn't take a rocket scientist to figure this out last November that we would be sitting here saying these exact words now.
And those who support these policies, unfortunately, are very, very small. And this is exactly what happens. Now, the conservatives accomplished what they wanted, which was a low turnout. Wasn't suppression, it was just disenfranchised. Too many people were disenfranchised and didn't show up. And, of course, they pushed it along a little bit, but that's what happens when people don't vote.
Now, understand what this is going to mean in Wisconsin. In Wisconsin, they want to make it as restricted as possible in those six Republican senatorial districts. They want to hold things down. They want to get this. They want to get this stuff put into place before the first round of the recall elections. Now, if that happens, if they're successful tonight in ramming this through so that people who are supposed to be voting in that first round of recall elections have to go somewhere to get these IDs or file this paperwork that these roadblocks that they're putting up, this is going to harm the Democrats, and the Republicans know that, which is why they're working diligently as we speak to ram this through. You know what's interesting? 22 states across this country, 22 states run by Republicans are doing exactly this kind of stuff. Here in Pennsylvania, we're doing the same thing. The State House Committee just passed this week their version, which is House Bill 934. Another one of these attack jobs on the poor, on the elderly. 22 states run by Republicans.
National playbook.
But no. Don't look at the man behind the curtain. No. Don't look over at the Heritage Foundation, or don't look at Cato, or don't look at the billionaire twin, Bopsy twins.
Here's the irony, Rick. They sell it as good government. I've heard of. I mean, you got to give it to them. I mean, they got brash kahunas.
Well, you know, here's the thing. That Wayward gave that speech in front of 20,000 ministers at the Southern Baptist Convention of Ministers there in Dallas. 20,000 religious people, they're saying suppress the vote to.
He was one of the first real, in the 80s, he was one of the leaders of the right wing in the 80s, very successful.
That's what money will do for you. That's what the billionaire dollars will do. You know, and the thing is there's nothing on the left that does this. You know, the right loves to say, well, you know, George Soros, he's a small player compared to the Kochs, the Scaifes, the Coors, the Olin Foundation, the Mars, the Walmart, Bopsy, the Walmart clan, all of them. You know, Pete Peterson, all of these players in this game who throw billions of dollars.
Modern-day robber barons, in a sense.
Not in a sense. They are the modern-day robber barons. These are the folks who are shaping the policy. And look, you know, the one billionaire guy just got the billionaire hedge fund manager, Raj. I can't even pronounce his last name. Was found guilty, and in one of the for insider trading, and one of the articles I was reading, it was saying, look, you know, these billionaires, they take. This guy was a billionaire, taking massive risks to make such a very small amount of money compared to what he had. I think it was like $60 million. He stood to gain by breaking the law and now going to jail for what could be the rest of his life. He's a billionaire. And what the article, you know, was saying is, look, these people don't think the laws apply to them. They write the laws. They're the ones who influence the laws. So when you look at it from that perspective, we have allowed a class of people to grow in this country who are far superior to anything the legal system can do to them, or so they think. At some point, don't we have to bring them down a notch? Maybe ask them to contribute a bit more to the programs that we need, Social Security, Medicare. I mean, before you're cutting off education to the future generations of this country, and it's happening across the country. You know, Ohio wants to cut over $1 billion. Here in Pennsylvania, a couple billion. Michigan, all across the country. There are massive cuts to education. Yet we're still handing out money to these billionaires who then take these gains and turn them against us. So we've given them the massive tax breaks, the lame duck session after the November election. We said, here, top 2%, take it all. It's yours. And they take it and they use it against us. They don't employ us. They don't employ the working class. They use it against us to pass laws like the one down in Texas, the loser pays law, that if you have the audacity to sue a corporation and you lose, you have to pay their team of millionaire lawyers. Thus, wiping any voice away that the working class would ever have against these multinationals. I mean, they are winning. They're winning. You know, Charlie Sheen said, winning, duh. That's what the Koch brothers should be walking around saying. Charlie's just a minor player in this. It's the Kochs. Amazing stuff. And I think I'm going to be screaming about this for a while because this is important. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break right back after this.
maturity. Rick Smith.
Washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call them at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
My name is Joanna, and my job is to protect children, to help them live in safe and stable families. I work for you, the taxpayers, in Children and Youth Services. Every day, I help children and families in crisis. Many parents have lost their jobs, making it harder to keep a roof overhead, food on the table, and stress under control. My caseloads are huge, and waiting lists for critical services are too long. Yet I know the safety of these children depends on me. Even in tough economic times, legislators must fund these vital programs. Because if we don't help these kids now, the cost to them and to us will be much higher later on. Children don't only depend on me doing my job, they're counting on you to care about their safety. Contact your state legislators today. Demand that they invest in programs that prevent and treat child abuse. Because a child in pain shouldn't have to wait.
Brought to you by SEIU Local 668. Visit our website at SEIU668.org and join our Human Services campaign.
The most important issues of the day. This is the Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember to check out the website at thericksmithshow.com now to find out what's going on in Washington, D.C. Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. Ellen, thanks for taking time for us.
Well, thank you so much.
What's going on in the big town?
Oh, my gosh. Well, Senator Kerry's going to Pakistan. The White House said that they will work closely with him, but he's independent as a senator. Now, I'm not sure what that quite means. I think it means that, plausible denial. They kind of want to say that there's a distance so the White House can come out with their own independent sort of ability to negotiate directly with the Pakistanis if they don't like what the senator says or does.
So maybe no worry about a second presidential run by a bad candidate?
Not at all. Not at all.
Evidently,
I love the way you put it.
Well, he ran a horrible campaign.
Yes, he did.
There was nothing else to be said about that. So a second run would be unwelcomed on my part. Anyway, I guess they found bin Laden's diary. Is that true?
They did. And I guess the National Journal got the scoop on it. And they found the journal. Apparently there's not much, as the National Journal says, about this wife or that wife. But there were some plans, and what they're saying is that so far there's no evidence that any of these plans were carried out. But he clearly was always thinking about ways to exact his anger, revenge, and everything else.
Well, if you were trapped in a, and for Pakistan, I guess that's pretty luxurious there. But if you were trapped in there with three angry women who can't go shopping, that sounds sexist. But if you were trapped in a woman with three, if you were trapped in a room with three women, you'd be trying to exact revenge, I think, as well.
I would say so.
I'm sorry. That was kind of rude. There's more news.
Well, you know something? Also, just want to say something. And it's all in Prime Minister Bhutto's book that she wrote before she died, that there's something called in Purda, which is essentially when a woman would marry, she wouldn't leave the house ever again.
Oh,
that's an old traditional Pakistani thing.
Well, thank God I'm not Pakistani.
Yeah.
some new information on the drilling front.
Yes. Well, it looks like on the drilling front, the House passed 263 to 163, a bill supporting saying basically if a drilling company has an application to drill within 60 days, the drilling application will go through unless the government can essentially raise some objection. They're trying to get this drilling very quickly. It probably is going to die in the Senate.
Yeah, well, I mean, it sounds like the Republican MO. I mean, here in Pennsylvania, they want to do the same thing. They want to hand out these drilling licenses, you know, like you'd get out of a Cracker Jack box.
Well, it looks like that's what the Republicans are doing as well.
So speaking of energy, I guess the oil CEO is coming to town tomorrow?
They are coming to town, and I don't know if you remember when the tobacco CEOs all raised their hand and it was a huge, you know, it was a huge photo op, so to speak.
Yep.
Well, tomorrow the CEOs are coming. We're going to see the hearing is called Oil and Gas Tax Incentives and Rising Energy Prices. The witnesses are the Chevron CEO, ConocoPhillips CEO, Shell, BP, and ExxonMobil.
Unlike during the Bush years, will they be sworn to oath?
I don't know. I imagine so, because but it is, in fact, it is in on the House side, so it is not necessarily. If it was on the Senate side, of course they would, but I don't know about the House and the Republicans.
That's my first question. So maybe they can come in and lie on the House side. So I guess the good news for me is that Newt Gingrich has now announced that he's officially running. Is that true?
He announced it by Twitter today.
Oh, very nice for him.
I know. Aren't you excited?
I am. I would have picked maybe a grander entrance, although I think we all knew he was gonna throw his hat into the ring. But good for him.
Opening an office in Atlanta. It'll keep Atlanta busy.
Well, single women, watch out. Orrin Hatch is in the news?
Orrin Hatch is in the news, and he is saying that he is going to be joining other senators on a friend of the court briefing saying that the health care law mandate is unconstitutional.
Good. He can join our governor here as to try and, you know, take health care away from people. Did you see the report today that the GOP health care plan is going to take another 44 million people off the insured rolls?
I did, actually. I saw it. I have to say I didn't read at length, but I mean, there's just no way with their plan that anybody can afford insurance or that it's going to be even offered.
Yeah, I'm guessing that is the game plan. To basically take us back to the days where we're maybe bartering with chickens for health care.
Well, at least chickens were not so expensive.
There was a hearing today on the Peace Corps volunteers.
Yes, it's very interesting. In the last 10 years, there have been 1,000 assaults, not all rape, on women Peace Corps workers. And the women told their stories, I mean, unbelievable. And what's really more unbelievable than their stories of rape is the fact that many of the Peace Corps physicians that they talked about did not help or support these women and, in fact, made them say that they were intoxicated, et cetera. And like one said, that she was actually fed something and then raped. I mean, it was just, these stories were heartbreaking.
Yeah, I guess, you know, it goes back to that old saying, no good deed goes unpunished.
Yeah, and these stories were really just scary, and now the Peace Corps is going to have to be much more active, but this has been going on for a very long time.
So what were the solutions?
I think what they're going to do, obviously, is they're going to do better training. I think they're going to try and do more protection, and I think they're going to take a very hard look at their country directors and also at the physicians.
Well, you got to do something about that because, you know, you try and do good work and you end up with something like that happens, and it's no good for the program all over. Some information on AT&T and the T-Mobile merger, which I'm against in principle. I think it's good for the workers. I think as a matter of competition and all of that, I think it's a horrible thing, but I think it'll be good for the workers.
Well, even the Republicans were having some hard questions for them about what was going to happen in terms of the number of people that they were going to displace in terms of competition. Was there going to be any real competition? All of those kinds of valuable questions. Was there essentially going to be enough broadband? What would a merger do? What would happen if it was a two-person horse race? That kind of thing. And again, scary results. I just don't know what's going to happen. And if it goes through, what kind of strictures they may put put on it.
Yeah, I just don't want to see that kind of consolidation. I don't think it's good.
Certainly not competitive.
Nope. Ellen Ratner, appreciate your time. Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
And now to find out what's going on across the street, what do you got for us?
Okay, Rick, a good article coming out of Patriot News concerning the budget ideas from the Pennsylvania Budget and Policy Center in Harrisburg. Their ideas on adult basic and health programs. One real bone of contention we have is Governor Corbett's plan to redirect $200 million into tobacco settlements funds to a business loan program. Pennsylvania already has about six different business loan programs. It doesn't need a seventh. At a time when Pennsylvanians are still struggling from the economic downturn, the Liberty Fund should be scrapped, and that money should go toward restoring health insurance for hardworking Pennsylvanians. Their proposals for cost savings, cracking down on Medicaid provider fraud. Some estimates have found that 7.9% to 13% of Medicaid provider bills cost are fraudulent. Pennsylvania reduced Medicare costs by 5%. It could save hundreds of millions of dollars. Rebalancing long-term care. Pennsylvania spends about 22% of the long-term care budget on home and community-based services. Raising the average to about 25% would allow the Commonwealth to access a higher federal matching rate, saving about $248 million in the year 2012. Reducing prison costs through prevention and sentencing reform. We talked about this numerous times. Pennsylvania's prison population has skyrocketed by about 500%. Let me repeat that. It has skyrocketed in Pennsylvania. 500% between the years 1980 and the years 2010, and the cost has grown to about $1.8 billion. Most state prisoners are not violent offenders, but strict mandatory sentencing guidelines have filled the prisons. States like Michigan and Texas have used treatment programs and other evidence-based strategies to reduce prison populations. These types of programs should be investigated in Pennsylvania to reform the system and more wisely use scarce public dollars without jeopardizing public safety. Close the Delaware loophole. Amen. We could save between $500 to $600 million. Enacting a drilling tax on producers of natural gas and other gas products. We could save about $200 million in the year 2011 and 12, and even more by 2015 and 16, they estimate you could save as much as $400 million. Opt out of federal bonus depreciation. Governor Corbett, without legislative action, adopted federal bonus depreciation rules, which amounts to a tax break for companies to buy and use equipment, not just in Pennsylvania, but in any state they do business. They should scrap this costly tax giveaway. It would save the Commonwealth about $235 million. Postpone the 35% tax rate in the capital stock and franchise tax. Over the past decade, this tax rate has already been cut by about 75%. It is scheduled to be fully phased out by the year 2014. We should delay that phase out and save the Commonwealth another $90 million. Close the tax. The tobacco tax loophole. That means cigars, and it also means smokeless tobacco. We could save another $80 million. End the sales tax vendor discount giveaway. Retailers are permitted to keep 1% of all sales that they collect from customers. Just by eliminating that, you could add about $74 million to the coffers of Pennsylvania. Close the American sales tax loophole. When you buy a book at Barnes & Noble store, sales tax is collected. Online retailers like Amazon.com and Overstock.com, however, are not required to collect sales tax on online purchases made in Pennsylvania. This gives online retailers an unfair competition advantage over bricks and mortar stores and drains significant revenues from the state. If we close that loophole, another $52 million. These are counter proposals to Corbett's budget costs. Another very interesting article coming from the Harrisburg Patriot, article on government money, which is going to be harder to come by in federal projects under the Corbett administration. Corbett has called for about $4 billion in cuts in his $27.3 million budget, including a drop of $150 million for hospitals for matching grants. He says he's ending WAMS, which is a source of tax money for projects. The problem is that government or money is intertwined with nearly everything we do, from multi-million dollar grants to corporations to a few thousand dollars for the local Little League. Keeping that in mind, I think it's important that we point out exactly what our taxpayer dollars have been funding in Pennsylvania. Just the Department of Community and Economic Development alone lists over 61,000 projects in Pennsylvania on its investment tracker since the year 2000. In Dauphin County alone, it gave $25 million to help build the Giant Center in Hershey, the ice hockey arena. In High Sparrow, it gave about $69,000 in community development block grants in June to repair curbs, patch roads, and improve storm damage. The Harrisburg Redevelopment Authority got another $632,000 recently for two former industrial sites at Raleigh and Fulton Streets, so Harrisburg Area Community College can build classrooms. Cumberland County, the Frederickson Library in Camp Hill received about $300,000. The Washington Fire Company in Mechanicsburg received about $715,000 towards replacing one of their old fire trucks. Mechanicsburg received another $998,000 for sidewalks, crosswalks, and stormwater runoff last year. Lemoyne received about $1.5 million from PennDOT. The rundown Molly Pitcher Hotel in Carlisle was renovated into low-income senior housing in 2007 with the help of about $500,000 from the state, $200,000 from the borough, and another $190,000 from the county. Lebanon County. Always Bagels, a manufacturing company, was promising about, and it did create about 78,000 jobs, received 790,000 infrastructure and opportunity grants. The Lane County Rails Trails, which is 20 miles biking and hiking path, received about $2 million from the State Department of Conservation and Natural Resources. Palmyra Civic Baseball received about $10,000 for renovation to the clubhouse. Perry County, the Perry Ferry, received about $900,000 from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Perry County Veterans Housing received about $212,000. And the Perry County Community Fair received about $38,500. York County. Last but not least, the York Central Market received about $200,000 to go towards renovations. Many of these projects, very beneficial to the communities, but probably many of them will not be funded by the, in the future, by the Corbett's budget. Back to you, Rick.
All righty. Thanks for reading that. We're going to take a quick break. We're right back after this.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
A sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME, Council 13. the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make everything happen!
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Also, you can email me, Rick, at thericksmithshow.com. Frank Snyder, the Secretary Treasurer of the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO, he went to the big Comcast annual shareholders meeting today. Had an idea. You know, maybe, the shareholders, well, I don't know, you know, should have some say. You know, and you know, Snyder told the attendees that an independent board chair is needed to bring critical perspective to the company's compensation policies and practices. He said that shareholders retain unequal voting rights because Comcast is effectively controlled by the Roberts family. You know, Ralph Roberts founded the company. His son is now CEO, and he ranks number six on the list, on CNN Money's list of the 20 highest paid CEOs, taking over $28 million a year. Frank Snyder pointed out that should Mr. Roberts lose his job, and the only way that it would happen, the only way that he would lose his job is if he fired himself, he would get a $25 million severance package. Not surprisingly, Mr. Snyder's request for an independent board chair to take a look at compensation, someone to, have the shareholders' interests in mind, was shot down. Again, now, this is the job of the CEO, though. The CEO's job, understand, is to maximize shareholder wealth. The job of the president of the company is to run the company. Too often what we see is we see these guys who are CEO and president, and again, I don't know how you can serve two masters because they're two very different, tasks. One is making sure that your operation runs effectively, it runs properly, it follows the law. The other is making sure your shareholders are getting wealthier and wealthier and wealthier. Now, the two butt heads because sometimes the CEO part, to say, hey, let's get more profit, will encourage the president part to cut corners, to use cheaper products, to break laws, to do a whole plethora of things. And again, I think Frank Snyder, the Secretary of Treasurer of the PAAFL-CIO, is spot on for calling for some independent oversight for the shareholders. But again, shot down. A 36-minute shareholder meeting, I don't know what you get done in that time. You barely get your coffee and get to the seat in 36 minutes. But like he said, there's a problem at every level with holding the company accountable. So there you go. Here's some good news. This should make everybody really, really happy. Now that Comcast bought up NBC Universal, with the help of the FCC kind of letting it happen, Meredith Atwell Baker, the Republican on the FCC, well, she has quit her job with the FCC. And guess where she's going to get a job? Yeah, you can say it. Yeah, she's taking a job with Comcast. Almost, I mean, it's not quite as bad, but almost as bad as Billy Townsend, the Louisiana Republican who was the key vote and key person on getting that Bush prescription Part D plan pushed through, or you know, we believe in competition except in drugs. We should pay full price for drugs. Where he quit as a congressman. A very Republican thing to do. He quit as a congressman and took a lobbyist job with Big Pharma, paying over $1 million a year. So he got a nice bump. He, for his vote and the push through of this drug bill that says that we Americans can't negotiate for price, he went from about $150,000 a year up to over $1 million a year. So good for him, right? No, not so much. But anyway, this Ms. Meredith Atwell Baker, the Republican, she plans on leaving, and she's going to go work for Comcast. Oh, boy. That just makes me so happy. Makes me so happy. This will make me happy. More lawsuits against Massey Energy. Massey says that it's facing more lawsuits filed by miners and the families of miners killed in per Big Branch mine explosion over a year ago. Massey says a regulatory filing Tuesday, the number of wrongful death suits has increased to 13. Why are there not 29? That's what I want to know. The company says it also faces lawsuits filed by four employees who claim they were hurt or suffered emotional distress from the April 5th explosion, according to the AP. The SEC, the Securities Exchange Commission, they document saying that eight families have settled and five have won court approval of awards. The settlements to date total $78 million, which Massey says it expects to recover from insurance. Now, like I said, you know, 29 miners were killed and two others were seriously injured. Still, nobody charged, nobody behind bars. They say they're still looking into criminal penalties, but still nobody, the guest of the state, nobody sitting in the Gray Bar Hotel, nobody with their tin cup singing, nobody knows.
And again, I believe criminal charges have to be filed by the state attorney general, which in that state makes it difficult. This man is very powerful, very influential. Correct me if I'm wrong, I don't believe the feds have jurisdiction on criminal charges.
That's a state issue.
That's a state issue, and therein lies the problem. You know, I think he's a common criminal. I think he was responsible. This is my opinion. I think he was responsible for their deaths.
I agree. General Motors is hiring again, and that's a good thing. They say that they're going to add 4,000 jobs over the next year and a half because people are buying their cars again. They were, again, you know, I go back to Zach Wamp saying, we should let them fail. Other car companies are doing fine. Let GM fail. You know, they're back on their feet with just a little help from us. We've gotten most of our money back, but it's creating jobs. It's creating manufacturing in the Midwest, a good thing. And, you know, at the end of this, while I wasn't a huge fan of Cash for Clunkers, I thought it could have been better tailored. It did create some demand that kept them going, and it's what I've always been talking about. We need demand. You need to get... In fact, the federal government, instead of saying here are loans to keep you afloat, say we're gonna buy all new cars for our fleet. Anyway, I want to thank everybody who came on the program this evening. Thank you for being here, and we will see you tomorrow night. Have a good one.
You've been listening to the Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@therickSmithShow.com or interact with us at us@therickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide and flood beneath the lunar sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous array. Democracy is coming to the USP.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Please, Mr. President, place some stimulus on me.